So a week ago, there was still a buttload of snow in my front yard. Today, there is no snow in my front yard, and there's little blades of green grass poking through. We have episode 30 of Andy's Things and Stuff on deck with my friend Eric Vasgard. It's going to be a fun one. SiouxFallsShooting.com brings you the podcast. Got classes coming up. Women's only intro to handgun this Saturday, April 15th. Get signed up, SiouxFallsShooting.com. Podcast 10 gets you 10% off of that class. Ladies, it's just for you. Nice, safe environment to learn and get all the basics down, and you know, none of those pesky men around to be irritating either, except for me. Also, South Dakota Enhanced Permit Class, April 22nd. Both of those, women's intros in Garrettson, but the enhanced class and all the rest of the classes will be outdoors from here on out. Not the classroom part. That's in the clubhouse at the Sioux River Sportsman's Club in Canton. Also, May 6th, AR Rifle Carbine Skills. Have a few spots left in that one as well. And I've got a few private lessons this week. You couldn't book one this week if you wanted, but you could next week. So, SiouxFallsShooting.com. Get the details. Get in touch with me, Andy, at SiouxFallsShooting.com. Podcast 10 gets you 10% off. So this guy's been in broadcasting longer than I have. He's been in it longer than I even realized I was going to do broadcasting back in 1999. He worked at Kello. He worked for Midco. He worked for Daktronics. And now he does stuff that ends up on Sunday Night Football and the Super Bowl. Here's my friend, Eric Vasgard.
I was like,
This is such a cool toy. I'm so excited by it.
It's very cool.
We're just like two men staring at all the pretty lights and electronic buttons. Because like now I have mute. So if I can be talking.
And then I mute myself. I can't hear.
Now I'm back. So, hey, how are you? It's Andy's Things and Stuff, episode 30. I'm now recording on a brand new device that is shiny and new. And it's got lights and colors. And it's got buttons where I can play dumb stuff like this. But I'm going to delete all of those. Those are just the pre-programmed buttons. It's really, really stupid. Eric Vasgard is my guest this week on the podcast. Eric, people probably won't know your name, but I think as soon as you start talking, they're going to be like, I know that voice from somewhere.
Yeah, kind of haunting people's weekends, I guess.
And for a long time, TV commercials.
Yeah, TV commercials too. Yeah,
that was also a thing. Are you still part timing down there at the radio station?
You know, for a couple more weeks.
Oh,
and then
are you hanging your headphones up?
I am hanging the headphones up for a while. So, it's just something that it's a fun thing to do, but at points in your life, you're like, okay, I've got a lot of other things in.
This is becoming a pain in the ass, and
yeah, and it was like, okay, with a lot of things going on, it's another thing I need to plan for the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in this city on this weekend. I've got to make sure I've got somebody to cover. And for the start of this first year, I was off probably more than I was on, just because I was in, you know, different cities throughout every month.
It's yeah. Eric has a very interesting job. Or a couple of jobs that have nothing to do with pre-recording radio shows at my former employer. But you were there before I was, because I started in February of 2004 at HOT, and you were a part-timer then. Did you ever work there full-time?
No. So I moved to Sioux Falls in the summer of 98, and my friend was working on... KKLS when it was Oldies.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then I had another friend who was doing country on Kickin'. And I was like, this is kind of fun because I did radio in Marshall when I was going to school.
Were you a broadcasting major?
Yeah, speech comm, radio, TV.
Okay, yeah.
So then I was like, this is kind of fun. I want to do something on the weekends. Plus, I mean, when you're a single guy, you're like, yeah, I'm going to go buy a jet ski. I'm going to go do these other fun things. And I kind of need some coin to make that happen.
Yeah.
So, anyway, started doing that. And then when HOT came on board, when KKLS made the flip from Oldies to Top 40, I was like, hey, I'd like to do that.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's kind of how I got started.
Have you heard me talk? My voice is amazing. You should hire me. Is that how you got the job?
No, it was kind of like, this guy will come in and he'll do, nights or weekends and evenings and just, you know, kind of, I don't know, he can take the garbage out and vacuum the floors or whatever else you need. So
I got into radio and I was only successful at any level because of personality. I was not blessed with a great voice. I eventually learned to talk so I didn't sound like shit on the radio, but it took a while. Like, I started off like, hey, I was puking all over the place at K-Sky 95.1, the Black Hills Best Rock. Like, I was seriously puking, and my voice was about an octave higher than it is now. Yeah. Like, I didn't even realize this until I randomly found a cassette tape from the state AA boys basketball tournament in Sioux Falls from, I think, 2003. And I threw it in and was listening to it. And the guy who was doing the games with me, his name's Nate Brown. He owns and is on the air at the Fox Sports radio affiliate out in Rapid.
Okay, yeah.
He's a good dude. I haven't talked to him in forever, but he's a good dude. He was doing the games with me because we went to college at Black Hill State together and I wanted help. And so he was like, yeah, I'll go. And so his voice still sounded exactly the way I remembered, but mine did not.
So play-by-play of sports, though, that's tough. I do have to say, I mean, you have to know, depending on the teams, you have to know the home team, the visiting team. You need to know the descriptions of the plays. I mean, there's a lot of things. Somebody who does play-by-play of sports, hats off to him, because
doing high school basketball was probably the easiest.
Okay.
Once you got to know the two Rapid schools.
Sure.
You know, because we would do Stevens and Central. And it wasn't tough once you got their names down. And I wasn't a big basketball fan, so I kind of had to, like, learn the lingo of, like, the elbow. And, like, I didn't play basketball, so I don't really know much about it. And so describing what's happening was a little more challenging. Football, I played football. I knew football inside and out. That was pretty easy. The actual play-by-play, though, to me, I don't think the play-by-play is hard.
Sure.
I think the color is the hard job.
True. I think solo play-by-play is probably super.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
You want to hear a challenge? I did baseball by myself. That's hard.
Oh, yeah.
So you got to be kind of full of shit just to get through a baseball game all by yourself. Because Post 320 wanted us to do the baseball games one summer. I was like, okay. You won't have any help? Okay. All right. Well, let's do it.
Yeah.
Because I love baseball. It's like my favorite sport. So, yeah. Let's do it. No, it's tough for sure.
And, you know, one thing I did, and I've kind of stepped a little bit out of my comfort zone a little bit. So I have a son that plays sports. And so it was, hey, I need somebody to sit up in the booth and be the loudmouth and introduce players and just kind of whatever. And I'm like, well, okay, I'll go do that. And so you introduce, you get walk-up songs for the kids, you play songs in between, and then you're like, oh, now batting number 21, blah, 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 blah. And
dude.
And so then coming up here for soccer season for high school, they needed somebody to do high school soccer. And I'm like, I've been around soccer for a long time, but by no means do I know everything that goes on the soccer field.
That would be like if I had to do announcements for gymnastics. Like,
So I was sitting there, and I'm like, okay, I just hope I don't say, now batting, you know? or something totally, you know, put your foot in your mouth. But it was a...
Kicking off for the Patriots.
Well, and so...
Is it even called a kickoff? I don't even know what it's called.
Well,
no. How do they start a soccer game? I don't even know.
So they start middle of field, kick the ball, you know, and you know, it's kind of like hockey, drop the puck, you know, whatever. It is what it is. But it's very much like you have to count down the clock because there's no horn. There's no buzzer or whatever.
It's constant time rolling.
Yeah. So you have to count the clock down so the officials on the field can hear, you know, when it's under 10, you're 10, 9, 8. And then the other thing that's, you know, they score a goal and you're like, goal scored by number 7, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to tell the time. And if you can find an assist. And the thing that I noticed with doing soccer was it's a long ways away from the press box to the field.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a spotter, whereas baseball, everything happens pretty much in front of you because it's at home plate.
Yeah.
And you know that, you know, players don't necessarily sub in as quickly as they do in soccer, you know, compared to baseball. And it was kind of a, okay, I need to slow this game down a little bit, and I need somebody up top with binoculars helping me say, you know, figuring out, okay, it's number 20, number 17, number 6, all coming in at one time for one particular team, and you've got three other kids on the other team coming in, and you want to introduce them, you want to say their name right, and all that stuff like
yeah.
that. So I finally ended up having a couple people up in the box with me, just helping me out, because I'm like, who was the assist for? Who was the goal for? You know,
oh, yeah.
what time? Luckily, they stopped the clock, so you can figure that out. But I'm like, to me, baseball PA announcing is a little easier than doing
oh,
soccer.
Yeah. Even basketball, like the my daughter was a cheerleader at Lincoln for basketball, which is how I ran into you recently over the winter, doing camera at O'Gorman. There was the guy that does the PA at Lincoln. He's not a young guy, but he's pretty good at it. He's quite good at it. But even still, all you got to do is just pay attention, like, who made the basket? You know, they're not more than, 50 feet away from you at the most. Like, it's pretty easy to see what's going on when you're sitting there right there next to the court.
Yeah.
But for soccer, I never would have even thought of that. Like, yeah, that would be, of all the sports that need a spotter, like, that's one that needs a spotter for whoever, even just the PA announcer.
Yeah, it was definitely a totally different experience because it was, you know, usually with soccer, if you're watching a broadcast or you're at a venue, you're going to hear so-and-so made the assist, you know, was it an unassisted goal? What was the time? You know, all those different things like that. And it you absolutely did need a spotter. Whereas baseball, it was kind of like, all right, it's a little slower paced. You know, you could make it work, but.
Yeah. Okay. So shifting gears here, your career has been rather interesting, I would say, because every now and then I would catch up with you because, like, I mean, you worked for me for 18 years.
Yeah, yeah.
But I saw you probably 15 times in 18 years, like in person, because you're the weekender. I'm not there on the weekend unless I happen to be there.
Yeah.
And for a while, you would actually be there live back when we needed people to do remotes and, you know, didn't anymore. But so I'd run into here and there earlier on, but so when you first moved to town, did you work at Kello right away? Was that your first gig out of college?
Yes, it was. So it was kind of interesting because I went to school for speech comm, radio, TV, and a friend of mine who graduated a year ahead of me went and got a job at Kello doing graphics. And he said, it was shortly after a class period or something, he had called me. You know, back in the day, your phone just basically took calls and you'd kick it to voicemail and it wasn't texting. There wasn't anything else going on.
No.
But it was, he'd called and he's like, hey, give me a call back. I got something for you. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I called him back and he's like, hey, a guy's leaving. He's going to go work for an advertising agency and he's been here for 20 years and he writes commercials and he does voice work. He's like, I think you could do this job. I'll put in a good name for you. Just put your stuff in. And I'm like, well, when are they going to fill this position? Because it was, you know, right around the first of the year, and I had until May to graduate from college. And I'm like, I'm this far. I'm
going to graduate. Yeah.
So anyway, it was, he put in a good word for me, and I went there and I applied and they offered me the job. And I'm like, here's the deal is I'm like, if you can put up with me coming after class and working however long I need to, I'll be full time. You know, if graduation happened on Saturday or Sunday, I don't remember back when, I'll be there Monday morning working for you full time. If you could.
So just put up with me for 4 months, 5 months.
Yeah. It was really, I think it was around February. So it was only a couple months that they really had to kind of just limp through this. And then, I had a blast writing TV commercials, writing, promotional pieces, voicing TV commercials, then working with their live sports crew that would go do high school games.
Like the state championships and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was...
Because they were still doing it back then.
Yeah.
Like,
yep. So we were traveling to Aberdeen, Huron, Rapid City, Watertown, Sioux Falls. I mean, it was just... You were all over. And it was back in the day where, you know, things were... I don't know. There were a lot of people that were part of a crew, and we were doing a lot of cool stuff that was, you know, we were doing the best that we could with what we had. I mean, it wasn't any fancy jib stuff or first and 10 lines or anything like that.
But I would say this, there was, and I don't mean to disparage SD, you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah. No worries.
I don't mean to disparage South Dakota Public Television, but both, somewhere along the line, both Kello and KSFY decided, it's not worth it anymore for us to do these high school state championships. Just economically, it was not, the advertisers weren't there for it or whatever. I'm sure it was a money decision is why they got out of it. And so then public broadcasting picked it up and they don't have quite the, you know, facilities that you guys had and the equipment that you guys had after doing it for years and years, you know, like all through my high school, like as long as I could remember, like either Kello or KSFY had like the state A basketball tournament or the state B. And like with basketball, they were all the same weekend way back in the day. So it was like, which one's going to be on TV this year? You know, and luckily when Beresford was in it in 1986, it was on KSFY. So it was actually on TV, but it just, the quality dipped for a while when it went to public broadcasting because they were using a lot of like interns and stuff to run cameras and the camera work wasn't great, but it's evolved. It's pretty damn good now. I mean, they've got it pretty well dialed in at this point.
Yeah. And I think the thing that's tough, and I've got friends that work for public TV and they do a great job with, you know, they do a great job doing it, but it's tough because it takes reps to do this, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure.
And so if you don't do football games on a regular basis and now all of a sudden you have to do the state championship, that's like going, you know, telling Fox, hey, you've got the Super Bowl, but you can't do any games prior to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So you just got to show up and everything hopefully works right. And you got to pull out all the bells and whistles and put on a flawless broadcast. And it's one of those things where it's like, you got to just keep the reps going because you can't just turn it on, turn it off.
No.
You know, there's also some personnel things. The personnel things are always kind of interesting because, you know, as a broadcast industry, and I go to events all over the country, and one of the things I go to on a yearly basis is a sports video conference in New York. And they talk about the broadcasting industry, sports, TV, radio, are all kind of an older white man's deal,
mm-hmm.
you know? And how do we get the younger people involved in this? How do we get them
like just working in the industry?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and you look at radio and it's
dying because there's no one getting into it.
Yeah. How many part-timers or how many kids out of college are like, yeah, I want to work at a radio station and
it's non-existent. You know what they want to do now? They want to start a podcast. That's what they want to do. Yeah. That's what my nephew is at Black Hill State right now. And he's interested in getting into sports media, like he's a big sports nerd, but radio, which was the easiest thing to do at Black Hill State and probably still is, and they've got a killer college radio station still to this day, but it's like, I think a podcast is probably the way to go.
Yeah, well, and you think of back in the day when you first started in radio, a lot of times you had to get in as a weekender,
yep,
working overnights. And,
or late nights on a weekend, something like that.
And the station was manned 24/7. You didn't have, you know, like you didn't have a cluster of six and one person in the room or in the station as a whole for maybe 5 hours. Every station had somebody there working every shift, unless you went to satellite overnights or something like that. But it was, you know, I remember times where I was working, midnight to 6 a.m. shift or whatever it was. As a college student, and it was like that killed you, but it was like that's how you get your foot in the door,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully you could get a job, you know, full-time job after that.
And that was the hustle. That was how I got hired. Like my first radio job, gosh, I haven't thought about this in forever. My first radio job was at, I always screw up the letters because the College Station in Brookings is similar. It's like, I think KDSJ in Deadwood.
Okay.
It's like 980 AM. And I would like DJ a shift, like couple evenings a week. And there was no automation.
Oh yeah.
No computer automation at all. I had already done college radio at this point. But I was making minimum wage, whatever that was at the time, like $5.50 an hour. but it was doing radio and I was literally spinning records.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I was, you know, I would also play the CD of Rick D's Weekly Top 40, or maybe it was Casey Kasem, was playing the CD, not ripping the CD into the computer like I did everywhere else. It was literally playing the CDs and then playing the commercials in the breaks and all that. And yeah, you did these, and then running board for games, which I got so confused the first time. I got yelled at by the guy who owned it, because old Uncle Al, because there was a free throw going on and he's like, and we'll be back in 30 seconds. He wanted me to play a commercial during the free throws.
That's funny. So you talk about getting into radio. It's the first thing I did in radio on a professional level, and getting paid whatever it was, $5, $4, $4.25, whatever it was. I don't even remember. But it was board op and games, like you said. And
that was fun, though. That was pretty cool.
It was pretty cool. But you had to figure out your timing. And working at an AM radio station was, you had to hit the news at the top of the hour.
Yep.
Or you had to record.
Like, there's math involved.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And there were some times where you were like, okay, I think I'm hitting the top of the hour, but you were a minute off. And then you're like, you turn up your news or whatever, and you're like, it's not there.
Where is it?
Where is it? So you go play a commercial, and then you come back, and you're like, oh, it's a minute later. I was off a minute just because you were trying to do the math. But no, it was a blast. You say Rick D's, and I used to do that on Sundays. So I'd work out of Marshall, Minnesota, work KKCK, which at the time now was a top 40 radio station. All the kids coming back from college would listen to that. And so I had friends who were driving back, you know, they'd go home for the weekend or whatever. And that's when you could play a song for somebody. Your playlists weren't, you know, dialed in, and if you played a song,
oh yeah, yeah,
you know, you could, and
you didn't have Andy calling going, what the hell are you doing? Messing with my playlist.
Well, and so the funny thing was, is you had back in the day, you had a recipe card with a box, and you
I never got to do that.
Oh, this was pretty funny, because you had the recipe card that had your powers, your golds, your recurrents, and we play a classic song too, and you'd go and you'd grab the front one and you'd be like, oh, this song's crap. I'm going to put this in the back and not play it. So you could, every, you know, if it was a 4-hour shift or a 6-hour shift, it would kind of, the format would slide a little bit depending on who the jock was and what their.
There was a little bit of influence.
Yes, exactly.
Which that's exactly how the software works. You know, it's basically the recipe card like you're talking about, like this song in this order, and you put it to the back after it plays. The software would do that and just peel it out, unless there happened to be another Beyonce song that was already scheduled somewhere else. Then, like, within, like, 20, 30 minutes, like, oh, well, we're not going to play that because we just played Beyonce. You know, then that would be a reason for a skip in the software. But it was basically the same thing. And when I heard that, I was like, oh, that's how they did it before the computer. Like, I never even thought about it, because I got in after you did, for sure. Like, my first radio was 1999, so I had no idea. And I only did, like, a semester of playing CDs and carts before we got the computer system.
Sure.
So.
Well, and so with this station cluster, there was one station that had a computer that was running the, you know, the programming and whatever, and it would always have some issues here or there. And so it was kind of like, you know, I think at the time they were still perfecting that or whatever. But going back to the Rick D story, so I would work noon to 6 playing my own songs, and I'd have friends that would call and be like, can you play this song? Yeah, sure. You know, you play the song, they'd get back on campus or whatever, and then you play Rick D's from 6 to 10.
So you'd be there for 10 hours?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, wow.
And so then the thing was, is at 6 o'clock, then you could start your homework. Because you'd be playing
you
Rick D's.
You got paid to just babysit the CD player.
Yeah, exactly. But there was one time where, and we'd always get weird weather in Southwest Minnesota, and And that was kind of a fun thing for me, was just when the weather happened, growing up on an acreage, I knew that you would listen to the radio to tell you what's going on with the weather, because you didn't have an app on your phone. You didn't know what the radar looked like or whatever. And so, you know, you would turn on, you know, my dad would either turn on the radio station out of Worthington or out of Marshall or out of Pipestone, who was talking about the weather at that time, just to keep us, you know, a lot of times you're looking out the window going, what's coming at us?
Yeah.
And go from there. So then
that was before Kello Doppler radar too. You couldn't know what was going on otherwise, you know, without Viper.
Well, and what's funny is we had this color radar weather thing was our big thing for the radio station. And people thought this was like we had live Doppler or something going on at the station. No, it was basically kind of like a Pac-Man game was really what it was. And it was like, oh, I think that's a storm right there, but whatever. But you'd read off what the AP was sending out, you know, the weather service or whatever. It'd be like, oh, there's a winter or there's a, you know, severe thunderstorm warning or whatever. And so Rick Dees was running one time and I would break in and give weather updates in between Rick Dees, you know, like when he would kick it to break or whatever. Yeah. I would do that and then we'd get back into it. Well, station manager or the brand manager at the time walked in and he said, no, you need to be live all the time when we've got weather going on. And he took the CD, the Rick Dees CD, and he just crushed it. And I'm like, we were just starting the second hour of Rick Dees or whatever.
So now all of a sudden you have to fill an hour.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was like, okay, well, then I will forego Rick and we're just going to go live and we're going to talk weather and we'll play tunes. But that was something that made an impact on me, that was like, if there's anything within our listening coverage area,
yeah,
and there's bad weather, I mean, obviously talk about it and let people know about it, because it could be life or death.
Yeah. And that was definitely still how it was by the time I got to Hot. Like working out in Rapid, we didn't get severe weather out there like here. I mean, we did, but I recall one big storm that knocked everything down in Spearfish. It was basically a derecho or straight line winds or whatever, kind of wreaked some havoc. But like wildfires was a big thing out there.
Oh, yeah.
When I was out there in the early 2000s, like, I remember one of the neatest things I've ever heard in local radio was actually during that fire when, I think the station's still called X Rock. The station's actually in Spearfish, but they've got like all the stations out in the hills. A lot of them have translators all over the place because the hills screw with radio signals really bad. And they were doing like nonstop, like, what was their names? Tom Collins and Jack Daniels were like the morning guys.
Don't like, you love names like that?
Oh, well, and like, and Jack ended up, I've got a story about Jack later that I hadn't thought of in a long time. They were just on live the whole time. I mean, they were doing these 12-hour marathon sessions, just kicking out the info. Cause I mean, that fire, and I can't remember what the name of that fire was. It was the really bad one in like the summer of 2000. It almost wiped out Deadwood. Like it came right up to the peak behind Deadwood to the east and south, and the wind shifted and it blew it back down the mountain. Mm. And it was that close to like taking out Deadwood. But they were just nonstop on there, like trying to connect people because so many people were displaced all over the place. Like the number of people who live in the hills that are not in a town is shockingly high. There's a lot of people that are just in these little acreages all over the Black Hills. And this fire was so big. And they were, you know, trying to get in touch with loved ones because, yeah, cell phones were a thing, but not everybody had one. And the reception sucks in the Black Hills. You know, it sucks now.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it was even worse back then. So, and one thing I remember that was just funny because some guy calls in and he's like, yeah, we're all down here. We're packing up and we're ready to get the fuck out of here. And this is on live radio. They didn't have a delay. But the thing is, when something like that happens, though, like there has to be an actual complaint filed with the FCC with a recording, and context also matters. Like, given it was like a local emergency situation, it wasn't just Janet Jackson flashing her tits on the Super Bowl. It was a very different situation. Like, this is the kind of thing they would never get a fine for anyway.
Oh, yeah.
But But it was still like, as a young broadcaster, I was like, whoa, he said fuck on the radio. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. And then you're like, oh, well, sorry. Yeah.
But no, the covering the weather, like, that was, it's less important for radio now. First off, because there's no one to do it anyway, is the main reason. But also, like, we've all got an app on our phone to tell us stuff. Now, I don't rely on the EAS on my iPhone because it's so inconsistent. Like, one time it'll go off, another time it won't.
Sure.
Of all the weather apps that I have found that actually give me information I actually need when I need it, it's Dakota News Now's weather app. It, like, when it comes to, like, a severe weather warning that's near you, you might get a few too many, more than you want. But, like, when the tornadoes were coming last spring, or in 2019 when they hit the Pizza Ranch and whatnot, that was the app. Both times, that was the app that we were like, time to head to the basement.
Yeah.
Both times. So.
So you talk about weather, and maybe this was radio class for me, but it was always when you're telling the weather, before they had the TV announcers come on and do it, you know, do their recording.
Which I hate it.
So it was always the weather is, or the wind, tell the wind at south at 24. You don't need to say miles per hour. And it's funny because the TV guys all say miles per hour. Because it's like, well, what are we measuring this in? Are we, what's our measurement?
Yeah.
Everybody's miles per hour. It's not, you know, whatever. Pick
have
your.
Have we ever measured it in nautical miles per hour? Are we going to do it in knots?
Yeah, because I'm like, okay, just tell me the wind's south at 24. I'll get that.
Just start screwing with people and do the aviation forecast.
Yeah.
You know, winds aloft are.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Oh, gosh. So every time I hear that, I just kind of.
It's funny you say that. How many skies are there?
Well, yes. Yes. Exactly.
It's a cloudy sky, not cloudy skies. Cloudy skies and 37 today. No, there's one sky. If you say the word sky, it's singular.
Yes.
There's only one sky.
How about winds?
Winds, I kind of get, because winds, when you say winds, to me that is, it comes and it goes. It sure. comes and it goes.
Sure.
So it's sort of, it is a plural thing.
Sure. What's interesting.
No one ever got on my case about the number of winds, but they did about the number of skies.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Well, and so I think there was a school of thought back in the day that with AM radio, you would get into the more of the details. So you would explain, you know, maybe you said a south wind at 24 gusting to 36.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas on a top 40 radio station or a country radio station, you'd be like south wind at 24. If you even said that. A lot of times you were like, it's going to be partly cloudy and 56 today.
I rarely said wind speeds on hot. I would just say it's going to be windy.
Yeah.
You know,
because the idea was, is you just give them the information and you get on with whatever. And whereas in AM, it was more kind of a sit down conversation with the listener and away you go. But I don't know.
Yeah. By the way, are you a whiskey drinker? Would you like some? I forgot to even offer. Would you like one?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll give you the good stuff. I'm just trying to get rid of the Basil Hayden. I'm going to give you some Bushmills. Yeah.
Oh, man. You know what? We were talking the other day on tequila. So I was in Mexico in the end of January, first part of February. And one of these resorts that we go to, there's a guy who does tequila tasting. And he is very knowledgeable in tequila and how to, like, I mean, he's like, no wonder why it has a bad name when everybody goes to the bar and they're doing the shots and the whole just, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What crapped in my mouth overnight? Well, anyway, thank you. So he was talking about how to drink it. It was, you know, swirl it.
Yes.
And almost like a wine.
Yes. That's what my brother explained to me when he was on, like, my third podcast was, look, you got to taste it. If you're just shooting it down, yeah, it's just like, hot fire, gross.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's like, there's good whiskey has stuff in it that you're going to taste. So if you sip it and kind of swirl it around in your mouth and get the flavors out of that, which, how freaking good is that stuff?
Yeah, that's good.
That's really good whiskey.
That is good.
Bushmills Irish Single Malt 12-Year Whiskey.
Sounds like you need a sponsorship.
You know, I should hit up the liquor stores because, like, at some point, we always end up talking whiskey on my podcast. So,
yeah.
And actually, the first whiskey I actually kind of fell in love with was Eagle Rare. And actually, a guy at King's Liquor up on
Mm-hmm.
North, is that on Cliff? It's in the convenience store there.
Yeah, yep.
He listened and was like, hey, I've got a bottle of Eagle Rare. I said, well, I'll come and buy it. But it was so far out of the way, I never got up there to go get it. Like, it just wasn't within the path of my day. Finally, he's like, hey, did you come by and get it? No, I haven't got it. I'll get it. I'll get it. Please, thank you. Don't get rid of it. And I finally get there, and the gal working there was like, yeah, they said there's a bottle of, I'm sorry, I can't remember your name, guy who messaged in. It's been a while now. But I get there, and the lady goes, are you Andy? I'm like, yeah, I finally got down here. I thought that was you, because he just called and said, here, stick this behind the counter for Andy. Okay?
Dust it off. It's been a while.
Yeah, it was probably a week or two before I finally got down there. But no, like exactly what you're saying about tequila. Like, I haven't drank tequila like that yet. I kind of want to try it. But no, my brother got me turned on to it. I'm not super snobby. Like, he's got the Glencairn glasses.
Oh, sure.
The proper sipping whiskey glasses. I just have like highball glasses. I don't.
Well, and yeah.
Pour a couple of fingers and call it a day.
So the other thing too, I mean, you've got people that will drink wine only in wine glasses, and I'm like, I think it probably tastes the same in a red solo cup, but whatever.
Yeah.
You be you. And go from there.
Although, like, beer in aluminum bottles, there's something weird about that.
Yeah.
There is a weirdness to it. It's not the same as an aluminum can or a glass bottle. It's kind of its own thing.
Yeah, I do. I have to agree with you. There's certain things where, and from working with some companies that do beverage like packaging or whatever, there's like certain ingredients activate to light, so that's why they're, you know, in an enclosed can or device that never sees the light of day. There's certain things that just they can't put in a plastic, or they can't whatever, and it's interesting when you start talking to somebody about the, you know, what's in their beverage and why it's packaged the way it is.
Yeah.
Because there is something to be said about that. Because you taste something in a glass, and you're like, ooh, this is really good. Or, ooh, this isn't the best in a...
I mean, a glass bottle or glass is pretty much always the best way to drink anything. I mean, it's all, like, if I have my choice, like, that's going to be the way to go almost every time. Having said that, I really like the convenience of an aluminum can.
Yeah.
Like, I, for the most part, buy my summer shandy in cans. It's better in bottles. 100%.
Sure, yeah.
But bottles take up more space in the recycling bin than an aluminum can does.
Well, and the other thing, too, if you've got, you know, other things other than adult beverages in your fridge and your kids are going after
like
whatever.
3 gallons of milk.
Yes, and all of a sudden one of those glass bottles tips over and then you have a, So, I hear you on that.
So you worked at Kell, you did the TV. You were mostly like in commercial production stuff and then did some live stuff. But like that would also like randomly lead to some kind of cool one-off gig stuff with like ESPN and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, so we'd get like a chance to it's not as much as, or back then it wasn't as much as it is now. You know, those the big brands, your ESPNs, your CBS Sports, your Fox, you know, they weren't necessarily in the upper Midwest as frequently, you know, especially like Sioux Falls and the surrounding areas as they are now.
But then once State and the U went D1, then that's kind of when that all changed, right?
Exactly. So now you've got like, you know, the Summit League basketball tournament, which is one of the recent ones here, that ESPN comes into town. And
Do you pretty much work that every year?
Well, so I end up...
If you're able...
Yes. Usually I'm around in some capacity. So it's either, you know, physically doing some work or just, you know, making sure things are running smoothly, is really what I end up doing. But it's you get on this freelance list and when people need you to come in, they'll call you up. And so it's, you know, and a lot of times I like to just kind of keep tabs on what's going on in the national scene and I'll be like, yeah, I'll work this crew and, maybe I'm pulling cable one day, or maybe I'm doing something else. Maybe I'm running a camera or whatever. It's just a chance to kind of connect with people in the industry and understand what's going on.
So what's pulling cable?
Well, so it depends on like, a lot of times you're in as a grip is what they call it.
Oh, yeah.
And so you're helping the down camera guys underneath the baskets, basically coiling their cable up, you know, letting it loose, I guess, as far as if they're running to the bench to get a coach and a player
sure.
shot, just kind of cable management. And other times you're helping to just hook stuff up.
So wireless technology with those is not there yet.
Well,
at
so
a broadcast level.
So what's interesting is wireless is, excuse me, I need to take another drink.
You better have some more Bushmills. Yeah. That'll wet your whistle a little better.
Yeah, that'll loosen the sinuses.
Yeah.
So anyway, wireless technology is pretty interesting for, and here's where the people that are non-tech will just click off. But it's wireless technology is great for cameras on the prosumer level, but when you get into the professional level, you need things like iris control. You need Tally, which Tally is basically a little red dot on the camera that tells the operator they're on or not on. So you don't have like a camera operator.
Oh, so those sorts of things are coming through your cables.
Yes, correct.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So through your cable is usually your power, so you're powering the camera, your intercom system, so your headset that the operator can talk back and forth
to
the truck. You also have your video signal that's coming through there, and you've got audio. You have Tally, you have iris.
What exactly is Tally?
So Tally's the red light that's on the camera.
Oh, that's the red light. Okay.
So that's helpful because a lot of times if you're in a high speed situation and the director can't always say camera 3, you know, you're on camera 4, camera 5, you know, you can listen, but sometimes that red light is what keeps your operator holding their shot because they're like, I'm on. So it's kind of like you could call it like an idiot-proof light or whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
just to,
but it's information you need to know because you can't just slough off then.
Yeah, exactly. And so the iris control is really for if, you know, you've got different venues that are lit differently. So you've got some that have what I would call like a performance or a game light where the court, like say, for example, basketball, where the court's lit really well, but in the stands it's dark.
Oh, yeah, it's not lit nearly as well.
Yeah, so you go to a high school game, you know, wherever, and the lighting's the same everywhere. I mean, it's just all the lights are on, it's full bore, whatever. Mm-hmm. But you get into some of these, you know, college and pro venues, and they've got different lighting settings, and the surface of play is lit differently, and it's darker in the crowd. So when a camera guy goes from the playing surface into the crowd to get a crowd shot, you've got somebody in the truck who is either opening up the iris or closing down the iris so it's bright.
Oh, so the cameraman doesn't have to do that.
No. So the cameraman is always focusing and they're zooming in and out.
Oh, okay. So you're just focused on those two things and not how much light's coming in.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So, and that's on the big broadcasts. So those are the ones where you've got, you know, your regional sports networks on up to your, you know, your Olympics and Super Bowls
sure.
and everything like that.
That no, I honestly I don't think people are tuning out. That's interesting as hell, like that sort of stuff. Because that's the stuff you don't understand what's going on. You know, I mean, I knew there was video signal in those cables, but I was in broadcasting. Like, I mean, I know a lot about the fields I wasn't in. I don't know everything, but I know a lot. But like, I had no idea that much stuff was going through your cables.
Yeah, and so that's what makes it tough to do wireless. Because you have mm-hmm. all that stuff that has to come through that system. And so there's some options out there that have some of them, but not all of them. I mean, so it's like, do you give up the option for Tally, but you can have intercom? I mean, an intercom is something that's kind of easier to solve because you can just set up a wireless belt pack with a headset and you're good.
Yeah. I mean, it could just be like a CB sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, and it's... It could be as simplistic as a two-way radio, you know, with an earpiece, or it could be more in depth with, you know, multiple channels of intercom and all that stuff like that.
When I ran into you at O'Gorman v. Lincoln here back in, what was that, January or so?
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing, here's the funny thing, and I did tell Eric this, so I'm not insulting him behind his back. Or even in front of him, it was kind of funny. I had not seen you in so long that I was like, that really looks like Eric Vaskard, but it looks too old to be him. I was like, it's gotta be, he's running camera. It looks like his body posture. That's gotta be him. And then I sent you a text and then at halftime you looked at your phone And I sent you a picture of you and was like, is this you running camera? And I see you laugh. I was like, yep, it's Eric, before I even got the reply. So you were running camera on the, like, under the hoop.
Yep.
On the one end. And like, now I understand what that was. You had a tally light on there because I remember you were you got a shot of my daughter and the other Lincoln cheerleaders doing their thing, like, at halftime afterwards or whatever, and doing that. And you were having to, like, deal with your cable yourself. You didn't have any help with your cable.
Yeah.
And you had, like, a little stool on wheels, didn't you? Or just...
Yep. Yeah. And that's, okay. And what's kind of interesting at O'Gorman is they don't have a stanchion that you can kind of,
no,
like,
the
pony
hoop
up
is,
to.
Like, hanging from the ceiling in the wall, right?
Yeah. Yep. And so that makes it a little different because, and so you caught me in a rare moment because normally I'm not running cameras. I'm usually, you know, kind of doing other stuff or whatever in the truck. But I always enjoy doing that because it's like, hey, it's a chance to kind of get out and do stuff and whatever. And plus I was like, I knew a lot of the kids that were playing for both teams and, mm-hmm. and whatever. But anyway, so when you don't have a stanchion on the court.
And by the way, he's talking about like the thing the hoop is mounted to.
Yes. Yep. Exactly.
Like most NBA games, there's a stanchion because it's down on the floor. It's not hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah. And so that kind of gives you a little bit of sense of, I can hang out here and I'm not going to get blown up on a fast break. You know, like if somebody's right. coming in and they're not going to run into you, or you at least have, my concern is always tripping the official along the baseline.
Yeah.
Because I'm kind of a taller guy. My knees stick out a little further. My feet stick out a little further than, you know, and last thing I want to do is get involved in a play and not in a good way. And so with a stanchion, I always, you know, like if say I'm at SDSU or USD or if I'm at, you know, wherever, I'm making sure that the front of my knees are even with that stanchion so that if the ref's running the baseline.
Yeah, there's no way you're in his way.
Yeah. He's going to run into the stanchion and he's going to look more like a fool than,
yeah.
than running into me. But it's tough when you're at a place like O'Gorman where the hoop hangs down from the top. The Barnett Center in Aberdeen's one of those too, where mm-hmm. it's like you don't have, you kind of feel like you're out in the open.
And you don't have any cover.
Yeah, exactly.
Nowhere to hide.
So, you know, when you got somebody like, you know, JT coming down at you and he's going to throw one down, you're like, okay, I better move out of the way because I don't want to get run over.
Yeah. No, that's... Did you happen to be there when he broke the hoop?
No, I was not. I was...
I wish I had been. That would have been fun to see.
I'm trying to think.
We're talking about JT Rock from Lincoln. He's like 7'1".
Yeah. So I was not... I want to say I think I was out of state on a trip someplace, and I got a text from my son that said, yeah, JT just broke the rim, and we're having to go to the backup gym to finish the game.
He didn't break the backboard, which is usually what gives way.
Well, yeah. And so what was interesting is growing up in high school, we had a kid that was 7'3". He ended up playing for the Gophers for basketball, and he broke the glass.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exciting because
yeah.
all of a sudden there's glass, you know, just it shatters.
There's a danger element to it. It's, you know,
oh,
it's
yeah.
like a special effect.
Yeah. It's, yeah, if you can time the smoke and the lights of the whole
oh,
works,
yeah.
That yeah, you're at a rock concert there. But anyway, yeah, so he bent the rim. And I don't know the whole situation or the situations behind it, but usually you've got a backup piece of glass and a rim in your venue that you can swap those out. Now, I don't know how many bolts it is or whatever, but I would have thought it would have been easier to swap out the rim, just, you know, take some time out of the game, than to move everybody, all teams, over to a backup gym and finish the game.
Well, it depends on who is there to do that work.
True. I mean, and that is the...
Because I think at Lincoln, they're hanging down from the ceiling there, too. Right?
Yes. Yep. You are correct.
Well, and the glass didn't break, so yeah, all you'd have to do is just swap out the rim.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, and this is all coming from secondhand, and like... I know a lot of the NBA venues,
they've got a whole stanchion on standby.
Yeah, you've got a whole stanchion, and you've got backboards on, like, dollies, basically.
Yeah.
And they're off in the waiting room, and you've got a set of a crew of people that'll flip that out really quick, and away you go.
Yeah. And it just seemed like either the spring broke, or... Because it didn't look like it was, like, broken. It was, like, something inside that, like, the spring disconnected or broke or something, because it was just hanging down, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that what I remember seeing?
Well, and what's kind of interesting is those things usually do not just fail on chance. So there probably was some shenanigans going on prior to that had loosened it or had whatever.
I'm sure it's not the first time he's like thrown one down, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, and you get,
I'm sure, or anybody else who can get up and even just grab the rim. Maybe they can't dunk, but they can grab the rim. It's sitting there hanging up doing pull-ups or whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah. You know, you get somebody that can jump up and grab the net with two hands, and then they start pulling themselves up to the rim. And, I mean, rims and rim technology have improved a lot over the years.
Yeah.
You know, from going back to just metal and shattering a backboard to...
And no spring.
Yes, spring.
Like back when Daryl Dawkins was smashing backboards left and right, he's the reason they invented the current styles of rims that there are.
Oh, yeah. No, it's... But it's always exciting when something like that happens.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just... It's a phenomenon that you got to be a part of, and... Yeah.
It's pretty wild. Okay, so you've mentioned a couple of times that you travel all over the country a lot. Okay? So... You not only, like, you work for Midco still, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. So you work for them, but you also have your own company, too.
I do, yeah.
And you do some, I'll just say it, you do some really cool shit with that other company.
Well, thank you. It's a lot of fun. It's something where, you know, you kind of get this itch, and you're like, I want to do something that's pretty cool that I don't know, you could... You get involved in different things, and you're like, this could really go somewhere if we, you know, did it upright and we put the effort into it and go from there. But yeah, so I mean, it's something where, you know, opening day for baseball here was just, you know, days away, hours away. I'm not sure when this podcast will release to the public.
It will be in the past by the time this drops. You're a week from Tuesday. I'm actually trying to get them a little further out instead of, you know, recording with Bert like a night or two before it's going to air, you know, or I have to call my buddy Tyler and go, hey, booty call. I need a podcast episode.
Oh, yeah. Well, so anyway, so with this company, what we do is we do a lot of graphic design stuff. So like we did a bunch of the studio graphic stuff for the MLB Network for opening day. So all their studio stuff, their... You know, the different team stuff.
And when you say graphics, what are you talking about?
Sure. So it kind of varies depending on systems. So like if we're doing broadcast graphics, we're designing a package that, you know, shows the brand's logo. Like for MLB, it's showing the different teams. It's how do you treat each team when they're shown on screen as far as highlights, or you're talking, you know, you're interviewing a player from that particular team. So it's motion graphics. It's studio stuff, like what's on monitors behind the talent.
Yeah, like the big screens that are behind it, and it's got like, you know, Twins versus White Sox as the game of the week, and that logo's kind of swimming around in the screen or whatever. Like, that's the kind of stuff you're talking about that you create.
Yeah, yep. And so that's the broadcast side of our group, and then we have another side that does the sports venues. So we'll do like for example, one of them is a college basketball championships, different things like that. So you're in a venue that has a center hung. So that's a big structure that hangs down from the rafters. That's has a video board on it.
Like what the Denny has.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So then you have ribbon boards that are between the upper lower decks. You've got scores tables, different pieces throughout a venue, and then we're doing content for that. So we've done stuff like, every year, kind of one of the big things is Dr. Pepper tuition giveaway, where they give away $100,000 to kids to throw footballs into a Dr. Pepper can.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do all this stuff that when that thing's going on, everything in the venue that says Dr. Pepper tuition giveaway, win, whatever, that's we'll do that. And so that's at like the SEC football championship, the Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12, ACC. It's pretty cool. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff there too.
I remember you telling me like when you got into this and you also worked at Daktronics once upon a time as well.
I did.
You were explaining to me about building video content for the ribbon boards, and you're explaining how it's like the dimension. Cause like I've produced video and like, I would always pick your brain when I was stuck on something like, how do I do this and whatever program. And, so there's like a resolution, you know, sort of like if you've ever used a photo editor, you know, if it's, you know, 1000 by whatever the dimensions are in pixels. And the dimensions for the ribbon board, I was just like, what? Because you were explaining it was like, but like, what would it, that dimension be? It was just some ridiculous number by nothing.
Sure.
It's essentially what it is, because it's the shape of the ribbon board.
It is. And those ribbon boards are really kind of tough for a designer to wrap their head around.
Oh, yeah. You got to be able to think beyond the screen.
Exactly. Because it's really, let's see, trying to think of an example. For example, like AT&T Stadium, where the Dallas Cowboys play, their ribbon boards, they've got like three ribbon boards. And they can be anywhere from like 48 pixels high, which is really not very tall.
No, that's
a computer
pretty
screen.
Short. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at, in comparing this to somebody as we're trying to talk through this, so your TV usually is 720 or 1080 pixels high.
Yeah.
Depending on what's going on. So like, you know, a broadcast like ESPN is 720 pixels high by 1280 pixels wide. You've got like CBS, which is 1080 pixels high by 1920 pixels wide. A ribbon board is only 48 pixels high by like 12,180 pixels long. So you're going, okay, this is great. And
it's like a long piece of tape.
Exactly.
Is the shape you're doing.
Exactly. And so then the other part that throws you into a little bit of a loop is when they build these structures and they put these LED ribbon boards out, they also have to allow for the expansion and contraction of the structure itself. So they have physical breaks in these ribbon boards so that they don't just mash on top of each other.
Oh,
so,
sure.
You know, as in a state, take for example, the Denny in Sioux Falls here has physical expansion joints. So as that building expands and contracts with the heat and the cold, you're not wrecking systems. And so you have those involved. You have like some places, one of the things we did here recently was for the Nashville Predators. They've got their scoring for hockey right behind their goals. So you have to know where their stats information is and where they put their penalties up. You know, like if they're going on the power play, you got to make sure your content doesn't hang out over those sections. So not only do you have to worry about this thing that's completely long.
Sure, because like their software, whatever's controlling that, is sort of compartmentalizing things. So they're giving you a dimension, but it's not necessarily the whole ribbon board.
Correct, yeah. And so there may be different things like these expansion joints you have to watch out for, or what we call like RTD or real-time data information. So your scoring, your stats, that's also on these ribbon boards.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of weird things. And then you also have to think of, when you're designing, who's going to look at this and where are they sitting? So if I have, you know, a real long piece of text, how many times can I repeat that around the venue? But then also,
and actually be able to read it.
Exactly. And then also, if somebody's sitting at the corner of, say, the ice or the corner of the court, what's behind them and what can they see out of their, you know, basically their vision in front of them? So there's a lot of things that are kind of involved in those ribbon boards. They're tricky.
So if you have a new venue come on as a client, you probably have to go to that venue and like look at it, right?
Yeah, it is very helpful to go there and physically see how they run their system.
Yeah.
What's interesting is, so like when we do these college championship stuff at like football and basketball, so you've got like trying to think of a conference game that will do their basketball championships and take Nashville Predators, for example, do their championship in the Bridgestone Arena, which is normally hockey. Now all of a sudden you have basketball and your dimensions are not the same. So what might be middle ice is not necessarily middle court.
Yeah.
And so it's very, you have to go see it. It helps. And then it also helps to understand how they're playing their system back. You know, like how are they playing their content? And it's really, I don't know, that's something that just helps you as far as understanding how to create content for them.
Yeah. No, it's one of those things that you see when you go to a concert or you go to a ball game or something and you see it there, but like, how many people ever think about, well, someone had to actually make that? Like, it isn't just like it's not like, you know, the magic videos that your iPhone makes out of the shit you have on your phone. You can't just like conjure this up to like show a bunch of Pepsi logos or whatever the hell it is, you know, all this stuff that runs even just on the, like, I honestly, don't take this the wrong way, but when I think of you, I always think of ribbon boards. Honestly, that's what, because it's just like the biggest problem. It would be the thing I would not want to do. You know, it just seems like it would be this complicated thing that, like, no, my brain cannot be wrapped around this. I don't get it.
It's something where once you kind of grasp it and you're like, okay, now I understand this, you can get started in it, but then there's always something that'll pop up and you'll be like, oh my gosh, now what do I have to do? And for example, so 2 years ago, Super Bowl at SoFi Stadium. Is that right? 2 years ago?
I don't remember.
Anyway, they have their ribbon board does something really weird out there. And we were doing stuff for the Super Bowl.
SoFi, is that the one in LA?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's, anyway, this is ribbon boards at SoFi are doing something totally different because they actually move up an elevation and down an elevation, which is kind of a nightmare.
Oh, wow.
For designing, you know, because the engineers who design those LED boards, they want everything to be square. And when you put them in a complete circle that doesn't move an elevation, you're fine.
It's still square. Yeah.
Yes. But once you start going up and then you come back down again, then that's where it gets a little tricky. And it also gets tricky for the programmers who are trying to put the content on that. So, yeah. So
whoa,
now
I'm just trying to think of, like, so do you have to do like a separate version of what's going up and down?
Well, so what you end up doing then is basically you take and you figure out how many pixels or feet am I going from the very bottom part to the very top part, and then where, so that's how you build what you call your comp, which covers the height difference, but then you also have your width difference that's going on as well. So it's really kind of, there's a lot of mapping involved as far as what we call pixel mapping. It's one of those where you have to be on site for a few days just to get everything in place.
Yeah, that sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah, that's, yeah. We may have to be on another glass of beverage here if we get into that.
No, we don't need to talk about pixel mapping. We don't need to get that far into the weeds.
No.
You know, I mean, I didn't bother to explain hit factor to people the other night when I was on with Bert, so I'm not gonna. I don't even know what you're talking about. Okay, so you've done that. You get to go to a lot of cool sporting events too, though, from time to time, don't you?
I do.
Like, what's the one where you're like, holy shit, I got to do this?
So what was kind of cool was early on in my career, I was actually at FC Dallas when David Beckham was at the height of his career as a soccer player. And he was playing at FC Dallas. And I got these passes where I could just kind of roam wherever. So I was on the field, and they're warming up, and they're kicking soccer balls, and I've never seen a soccer ball fly that fast before. And I'm like, I need to duck. These things are coming in at, well, I don't know how fast they're going. I don't know how fast you kick a soccer ball.
But I have no idea.
They were flying, and I'm like, I don't want to get a ricochet off the cement wall or something. But that was pretty cool because it's like, all right, here's a guy who has kind of changed the professional sports landscape on the soccer side, but also kind of across, you know, a bunch of different generations and a bunch of different countries, you know, being somebody from England that comes over to the U.S. to play soccer.
As opposed to football.
Yeah. Whichever way you want to call it.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, that was kind of cool. Some of the things like with Super Bowls, people are like, oh, you want to go to Super Bowls? Not really. Now,
that seems like the worst one to go to.
Yeah. So, like, you want to get to, like for me, I want to get there a week out or 2 weeks out, get stuff prepared, and then get out before the week of Super Bowl. Because
it's a madhouse.
It is nuts. And what's going on is the week leading up to Super Bowl, you have a ton of things happening. You have security doing their security runs through. You have vendors who are on site loading pieces of equipment. They're loading gear. The other thing, too, is you've got, you know, like the security team is doing flyovers over the stadium and mapping out the neighborhood so that they can see what's all going on. It's, you know, a Super Bowl, if you're going to work a Super Bowl, it's a 14-hour day and then some.
Gross.
Because you have to get there way early in the morning, go through security, you're there for the game, and then usually you're tearing down your stuff or you're closing up, finishing up everything way after people have left because you don't want to get stuck in traffic and wait for whatever. So it's a long day. The event itself is way more enjoyable on TV. And
honestly, football, I don't care if I ever go to another NFL game ever again. It's just so much better on TV, especially with modern broadcast cameras and all that. It's just better.
You know, and what's interesting is that the venues have a hard time competing against the TV experience.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're like, you can drink and eat a lot cheaper in your house, and you've got a pretty decent setup with your TV. Uh-huh. How can we compete with that?
And there's a line. I know where the first down is.
Yeah.
Without having to pay a whole lot of attention to down and distance. You know, I can't remember who told me this, but they were with somebody who actually was like, where's the line for the first down? They didn't realize that was generated by the network.
Well, and so what's interesting is, so you have a lot of people in venues now that are putting in the first and 10 line themselves because people at home are so used to seeing that now you have it on your video board in a venue.
Oh, yeah.
And what's also interesting is that if you go to an NFL game, there's so much stop and start because of the TV timeouts.
Oh, God, it's maddening.
So it's really, I mean, you get momentum, and then all of a sudden it's a TV timeout.
Yeah.
And you're out for 2 minutes, 2:30, whatever it is, and then you're back, and you start again and stop again. And if there's somebody that needs a speed of pitch clock, like baseball's instituting,
yeah,
football would be one where it's just, it's if you're a fan at a venue, and I get there's people that enjoy going to a Vikings game or going to a Cowboys game or whatever it is, but you could probably improve the fan experience if you didn't stop the action that much. And I know TV rights and broadcast.
Well, that's where all the money's coming from.
Exactly. And that's the whole circle of life with these regional sports networks now, like Bally's and like AT&T Sportsnet, that are going belly up because they paid too much for rights fees to these pro teams. And then their cash cow, which is subscribers from cable, are going down.
Well, like when Bally Sports was not on YouTube TV, that was sort of the, because when it was still Fox Sports North, we could get the Twins on YouTube TV because we ditched cable. And well, we haven't been on cable in forever, but we had DirecTV, and we just were like, we're not really watching TV that much. We found ourselves watching Netflix and stuff like that more, but like I still wanted to be able to watch the Twins and other things. And then when they weren't on YouTube TV anymore, it was like, because Bally Sports got the deal. And did they go belly up? Like, I didn't even know.
Well, so the latest is they filed for bankruptcy, but they've made some payments to different teams. Like, they made payments to the Padres so they could broadcast the Padres games, because the Padres are going to be supposed to be, you know, if they don't choke, they should be a pretty solid team with a lot of star power. But it's tough because the conferences know that they're, you know, the conferences and the leagues know their big dollars are coming in from TV rights. And how do they keep that same money, but yet they would love a direct-to-consumer product that you could go and watch every game for MLB on an MLB app?
Yeah.
Because what the MLB wants is they want consumer information. They want to be able to not have a middle person that is dealing with what's going on.
I don't think MLB has any desire to staff broadcasts
well
on their own.
And so that's the thing that they have said they would step in the chance that Bally's would not be able to do their thing.
Oh,
they
okay.
would basically kind of take over and away you go.
So it'd be worth it to them in the end to do that.
Yes. Yeah. But the other part is they'll never recoup their TV broadcast rights fees in the same dollar amount if they went to a direct-to-consumer route.
Oh, okay.
So by having everybody,
but by having their fees as high as they are, they're also not going to be getting them that way because they can't. It's not worth it to the networks to pay that much.
True. Yes. Yeah.
Anymore, because apparently that teat has run dry.
Yes, and it's a very much of a. Some people compare it to an old system that is broken. That is, they're trying to figure out how to make it work.
Well, it worked when it was cable, and that was the only game in town.
Yeah.
Like, I had Joe Sneevy on, actually, my most recent podcast that will, by the time this airs, that mm-hmm. will have been the most recent one, I recorded with him a few days ago. And we was talking to him about, like, what happened to newspaper, you know, how internet killed newspaper. And he said, and the thing I didn't realize was, internet didn't kill newspaper by itself. Newspaper killed newspaper because around 1994, newspapers started putting their, you know, there was never an expectation of the content of the newspaper to be free. No one ever had the expectation of getting that for free.
Yeah.
And then newspapers started putting their content online for free. And that was the start of the end. Back in the mid-90s, when the internet started to proliferate, that's what killed newspaper. And by the time people were actually starting to be willing to pay for content on a more substantial basis, they'd already hit the iceberg.
Yeah.
And it was just on its way down. And that's why they went and started their own paper. He and, Jonathan Ellis, the Dakota Scout. So
yeah,
go check those guys out and pay your $5.33 a month. I like their podcast too.
You know, and what's cool about that is that a lot of you look at the various newspaper outlets, the various TV outlets, it's very much conglomerated, and there's kind of a they're trying to have some local flavor to it, but a lot of times the decisions are made not in
way
a local,
above the local market. Yeah,
exactly. And so then what made people attracted to this particular, you name your news outlet or whatever, was because of the local decisions made at the local level. And when they're made at some distant level, there's kind of a trickle down, and people see through that too. And it's like, okay, I can find something else. The other part too is everybody's phone gets them the information right now.
Yeah.
And so why wait for a 6:10 o'clock or a 5:00, 6:00 or 10 o'clock newscast, or wait for the next day's newspaper to come out because you got it right on your phone.
Right. But at the same time, though, like, that had that model been done differently in the beginning, because newspapers were the originators of online news like that. So had that been done differently right away, who knows what it would be like right now? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's still people making a living writing articles on the internet, you know, but it's not quite as easy as it is for a local paper to do that, even in a city the size of Sioux Falls. Like,
yeah,
Joe told me when he started at the Argus, like in 2010, there were 60 reporters.
Oh, yeah.
When he and Jonathan left, there were 16.
Yeah.
Like, damn.
Well, and so you think, okay, if that's happening in Sioux Falls, which is the largest city in South Dakota,
yeah,
what is it happening? You know, what is it like to smaller rural newspapers?
Yeah, I you know, that's a great question. I wish I would have asked him. I wonder if they're not affected less because a lot of them never put their stuff on the internet. You know, it was still just the local paper. And in a lot of places, it's still just the local paper. And, because, like, when I've looked at I can't think of the name of the paper, but, like, the paper in Willmar, which I think is in the group that is run out of Fargo. There's a number of little local papers run by a company in Fargo that Patrick Lally works for now.
Forum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be turning on a TV station here with news here, I guess, at some point. I would think some of those smaller papers that weren't this big monster like the Argus Leader was, or, you know, big city newspapers, I don't know. I'm completely speculating. I wonder if it affected them less, or even really small papers like, you know, the Beresford Republic. You know, it's usually just, is somebody going to take that on? And no matter what, it's just going to be all the local businesses supporting that paper to put out this publication. Yeah. You know, it's basically almost like a public service to, okay, we got to advertise because, not because this is great for our business. It's just if we want to have a paper, you know, us businesses kind of have to help them out.
Well, and you have very much a support your local mentality.
Yes.
I mean, and that's the same way with like smaller radio, you know, in local markets.
Honestly, some of the best radio I hear now is in super small towns.
Yeah. You know, I enjoy, when I travel all over the country, I enjoy listening to local market radio. And I, not necessarily where I've got like Sechrist in the morning, who's on 50,000.
Who gives a shit?
Yeah. So I would love to hear local personalities doing their thing, you know, whether I'm in Dallas, whether I'm in LA, whether I'm in New York. You know, I don't want the boiled down whatever. I'd like to hear the local flavor.
Or if I'm in Wilmer. Yeah. You know, I mean, like when I say small town, I'm talking like way smaller than Sioux Falls. I'm talking about these little mom and pops, and they're still like the one guy and a newsman in the morning, you know, doing their thing. There's a news talk station in Wilmer that is all local stuff in the morning. And it's got everything from actual news, statewide news, down to like the obituaries. They're reading the freaking obituaries. I love it. I absolutely love it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's not that I give a shit about who it was that died in West Central Minnesota, but it's just local flavor.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just, I just like the sound of it as just a backdrop. It's, I don't know, it's just how it should be.
Yeah.
But radio has, and of all the media, I mean, radio has done more to put a gun to their head and just keep pulling that trigger over and over and over. Like, I keep seeing memes. Like, I follow these two accounts on Instagram are just absolutely hilarious. Shitty PD is one of them.
Not police department.
No, not police department. It's a program director.
Yeah.
And, which was what my title was before Town Square changed it to brand manager, which sounds like I'm in charge of, like, tampons or something.
Old Navy.
And then the other one is Shitty Radio Jock, which is actually a pretty big account, but it's private because like radio executives just so badly want to know who this guy is. But that guy rails on Odyssey because their stock price is now down like sub $1. Like, well done, everyone. Well done. You want to know the kiss of death to a radio company when they go public, when they've got an IPO. Because I remember when we worked for Cumulus, they went public. And that was when everything got stupid. Because as soon as they go public, everything is about the bottom line. Because it's 100% all. It's no longer about the product. And I don't give a shit what industry you're in. As soon as it gets to that, every decision is made with the bottom line in mind.
Yeah.
And so that's why like I was disappointed when like Black Rifle Coffee went public. I'm like, oh, there's a cool company that's going to suck. As it turns out, Evan Hafer's got other issues. But,
I agree with you because you look at some of these other companies that have done really well. They go public and they start tanking. And I'm like, take them back private.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like they forget what made them great to that point.
Exactly.
And continue on with that path.
But that's not what the executives want to do. They want to play Wall Street.
Yeah.
That's what, like, I want to be the CEO of a company that's traded on Wall Street. So, you know, like with Town Square. Town Square was a really cool company when they bought us. Like, I remember when that happened in 2012. We're working for Cumulus at the time. And Cumulus is a dumpster fire. It used to be the biggest dumpster fire in radio until Odyssey took over that title. Because they've really shit the bed. But I remember when I can't remember if it was an email or if it was like a news story that Cumulus was selling a couple of markets to Town Square Media. And I was just like, oh no, we're being sold. And then I'm like, well, it can't be any fucking worse. like I literally, like at first, like we're being sold. Oh no, panic. And then about 30 seconds later, I was like, it can't be worse. Like, it literally cannot be worse than this. Yeah. And for a while, it wasn't. It was fantastic. And then they went public. And then it got shitty.
Yeah.
It got really shitty really fast when they went public. And because then everything is about the bottom line. And Yeah. And that's why you have syndicated morning shows, because they're a lot cheaper than Andy and Tosh are. A lot cheaper.
You know, it's interesting because you talk bottom line. By the
I want to follow that up quickly, though, and just say it's not because we were expensive.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I wasn't commanding a massive salary. It's just they're that cheap. The syndicated morning show is very cheap to put on.
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting is, so you hear the whole the bottom line conversation, and working in an industry or in industries that are mainly creative based.
Yeah.
You talk finance, and if you want to see a bunch of people shut down in a hurry, you talk creative, and you talk, hey, we need to tighten the belt here or whatever, and they're like, we're creative. We don't, you know, to them, a spreadsheet talking dollars and cents is the furthest thing away that they want to deal
yeah.
with. They just want to make cool stuff and move on with their day. And so when you start talking and you're like, well, okay, we're over budget this month, and they're like, oh, well, that's, I mean, what else can they do? And you talk creative, and creative is probably one of the areas that gets beat down the most.
Oh God, yes.
For dollar wise. And it's
that's
like,
what's killing radio.
And you go, okay, so I want this cool thing done, and it's going to take X amount of hours to do it, and here's the dollar amount. Oh gosh, I don't know. Can we dial that back 20%? Well, okay, so if you're going to go take your car to the auto mechanic, and he tells you it's going to need this and this and this, and here's the price for it, are you going to say, well, can we do it
for 20%? Can we dial that 20%?
Yeah. And creative always, and I stand up for the creative group, because they always get beat down, and they're the ones that have to, you know, kind of take it in the shorts every time there's a conversation involving money, because either it's the quote is too high, or the, oh, can we do this for cheaper? Or, you know, it's ideas, it's concepts. It's like you go and you pay somebody else who's a professional to do their work at the rate that they command. You should do the same for creative.
Yeah. But, I don't have a problem with, like, for instance, in the radio industry, the salespeople, I think, generally, for the most part, make 20% of what they sell as, like, their commission. I think somewhere in that neighborhood, that's probably about right.
Sure.
In a lot of media, it's somewhere in that 20% neighborhood. I don't have a problem with them making that, whatever their commission is on what they sell. Like, 100%, they're the ones bringing in the money. They deserve to get well paid, 100%. What are they selling? Now, I'm not 100% responsible, because there's the gigantic electric bill for the transmitter, okay? And I don't know what it is, but it has to be enormous.
Oh yeah,
it takes a lot of electricity to run a transmitter on a radio station. It's the lights in the building. Like, there, I understand there's a lot of things that go into having that radio station. But when it comes to your on-air talent, and they're making somewhere in the neighborhood of like 2%, that doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah. Well,
and that's where, especially in markets this size, that's where it's like, if the on-air people are taken care of, you know, or if they're taken care of, they're going to kick ass for you. The other way is, if they're scared to death and you make them feel like, well, you're never going to be able to do anything in any other industry, you know, we're just going to beat you down and make you feel like you're lucky to have a job. Because there's people, and I'm not just talking about here, I'm talking like all over the country. The number of people who should just quit and get out of the business is, there's a lot of people who should just get out of the business. Like, quit taking the abuse. Just do it. Just move on with your life. There is life outside of radio, I assure you.
Well, and I think some of it is the fear of moving on, or like,
oh yeah,
finding something new, something that's, because it's very much a scary world to go out there and be like, I've got this idea, I want to go do something.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, your for sure thing, which is your paycheck,
uh-huh.
And jumping off track just for one second here, I was sitting in a conference, and it was about kind of the whole the experience of being working for a group and being like building good
work environments and good work atmosphere. And they said, you know, if you're getting your soul crushed on your day job, go find a part-time something that you can put everything into it until something else comes along and you can make that and grow that. And the tough part is when a for sure thing that you're getting a salary at this job that's just crushing you over here, but you've got this really great idea and you can grow it and build it and make money for it and be happy about it. But yet it's like, I'm scared to jump, make that yeah. jump. And a lot of people have that. And it's true. It's a real thing.
Dude, what you just described is me. That's literally what you just described.
All right, $150 here.
Yeah.
Your therapy session.
But no, that's exactly what I was going through. It's just staying at the radio station was no longer tolerable.
Yeah.
It was just, I cannot live with myself and continue this. This is over. And now, like, that was the rock bottom to make me make the leap.
Yeah.
And do the shooting instruction thing full time, because that's literally what I was doing. This was my side thing. It was just, like, in the beginning, it was just literally a part-time job for some extra scratch so I could buy some more guns, you know, because they're not cheap. And I like to shoot stuff. And yeah. ammo's not cheap. And so it was basically that. And then it kind of took off better than I thought it would. And it was like, it was a part-time job that was like, holy shit, like, this is fantastic, you know. And doing it full-time is certainly more challenging to make it as a primary income. But like what you were also saying, though, is I want to combine with something I said about there is life outside of radio. Here's something I never thought in a million years I would say out loud. And I'm going to put it on my podcast right now. Okay. Being a full-time shooting instructor, I have a lot of downtime. Okay. I can't fill it all with, you know, putting content on my social media, my website. I can't. I have a certain amount of free time. In the morning, I have nothing to do except to take my kids to school. My wife can take my kids to school. So I started driving school bus. I let School Bus Inc. pay me to get a CDL. You know what? I fucking love it. It's great. Yeah. I've never driven big, giant vehicles before. I enjoy the hell out of it.
Yeah.
It's great. I'm having a good time doing it. Sometimes the kids are really shitty. Yeah. But most of the time they're not.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's really rewarding.
Yeah.
Well, you
yeah.
know? And it's like 2-3 hours a day.
Yeah.
First thing in the morning. And I'm already a morning person. So it was like I had no idea how much I was going to like it. I honestly didn't think I would like it.
Yeah.
And I actually really, really like it. And like I want to get more more stuff on my CDL that I could do, like add on the air brakes and, you know, maybe even get a full class A or something at some point. Like I don't have any desire to be an over the road trucker, but who knows? Like,
yeah,
I mean, but there's always going to be a need for that.
And you never would have done that if you stayed.
I never would have if I stayed at the radio station. In fact, there was a time, I will also admit, there was a time where I would have like turned my nose at such a thought. Yeah. Like, why would you want to drive vehicles? Like, what a shitty thing to think, you know? And then I start doing it. It turns out I love it. And like, the older I get, the more I like, why wasn't I in shop class in high school? Because like, I would love to actually know how to weld.
Sure. Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And like, I did an episode with our old intern, Diane.
Yeah.
A few weeks ago, her and her
husband. Sparks up your nose.
Sparks up. It was so much better. The reason this fancy box is sitting here right now is because I lost the audio of her telling this hilarious story. Like, you only got like the retelling of it. It was so much better the first time around when she somehow got a welding spark under her helmet, up her nose, and it burned in her nasal passage. Like,
it's not funny to laugh at, but it is. It's a funny.
No, she's fine with you laughing at it. It's sort of an amazing thing to have happen, and then just the smell of molten metal burning flesh right in your nose. Can you imagine? But like the whole, like, I always kind of liked the whole Mike Rowe thing, where he's like, you know, dirty jobs and this and that. And now I'm like, I wish I knew how to do that shit.
Yeah,
like I made air for 20 years.
Yeah,
I literally made nothing. I made noise for 20 years, and someone paid me for it.
Yeah.
You know, and so like I so hope I mean I hope my kids go into some sort of like field like my buddy Nick, where he's like working on power lines. You know, he's, as he called himself, I'm just a dirty line worker, you know, but like that's a great gig to have. Yeah. You know, and there's always going to be a need for electricity.
Oh yeah.
You know, you're not going to be without work if you got something in that line.
You know, you were talking about hours in the day, and one thing's that sitting down as somebody who manages employees and their time, I had a conversation with an accountant who was like, what do employees do in a 40-hour workday or 40-hour work week? Jeez, 40-hour workday. Holy. Ugh. Oof. Anyway, 40
Boy, you hour- are a prick of a manager if that's how you think.
So, and it was like, okay, so what? You've got 40 hours in a week. What actually goes down in those 40 hours? You know, because there's employee conversations around a water cooler or a whatever. I mean, water cooler is just a term for whatever. You've got meetings. You know, is it truly, you know, is it 25 hours in a 40-hour work week that actually have work getting done? And what I think brought it to surface is this whole work from home COVID thing.
Yeah,
where people are like, well, shoot, what do I normally do during 8 to 5? I kind of sit around at the desk for, you know, from 2 until 3, and then I kind of do something from 3 until 4, and then I got to go pick up my kids at 4:30. You know, it's like, and I think people could work smarter and get the same amount of work done,
yeah,
in less than that 40 hours, and then they could do stuff with their kids or.
Like the people working from home have been doing. Like the it was amazing to me during COVID how when people were starting to come back after that, when they were sent home because of, you know, whatever got them to actually decide, okay, I think we can do this.
Yeah.
But it was still just like old fart managers could just not let go of this control freak in themselves of having, like, if they thought that their people were actually working every one of those 8 hours for every second of it, they're out of their damn minds. Because there's a certain amount of time where you just stare at your wall going, I have this thing I'm thinking about and I don't know what to do. And it has nothing to do with work. Like, you can't control that.
Yeah.
You can't control people looking at a screen, not actually working and just thinking about other things. Like, that's going to happen. And yeah, it's funny you were saying that it was accountant, because the thing that went to my mind was, what was their approach to it? Like, were they approaching it like, how do we account for exactly how we can get everybody to do all this work, all that we, you know, that we want, and then actually account for it? You know, how do you do that? Well, especially if you're in a creative field, like, there's no way you can.
Yeah. Well, and it was trying to justify new hires, and you're like, okay. And so what's interesting is the whole work from home aspect is. Yeah, you may have somebody who typically is clocked in 8 to 5, but they maybe do their work better from like 7 to 10 at night.
Yeah.
You know, they may work part of the morning and then they pick up after, you know, after everybody eats, get the kids, you know, get their showers, get them to bed, whatever. And then you work from whatever. And to me, I'm like, I don't really care when you work. As long as
the work's getting done.
Yeah, you get it done and you deliver it on task or on time and it's great work and you're not phoning it in.
Yeah.
I really don't care.
No, and like I would be, before I was married and had kids, like working at the radio station, like I worked a lot of 10 to 12 hour days. Some of that 10 to 12 hours was goofing off.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, you're just shooting the breeze with an employee and you're
or I go to lunch for 2 hours. You know,
yeah.
But I like the work was still all getting done, you know, and when people are hourly though, that's more challenging because I'm now there's this accounting thing. It's not just, well, I'm getting paid whether I spend 12 hours here or 7, you know, and so when people are on salary, it's a little easier to like not get so wound up about that as long as what you're paying them to do gets done.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
No, it's an interesting dynamic. Like my wife came across a poll the other day that said for the first time ever, less than half of Americans surveyed think college is worth it. like worth the return on investment.
Yeah.
And I got to agree with them. Like, if I was coming out of high school now, I would not go to college.
Well,
unless I could go for free. Like, I got massive scholarships.
Well, and what's interesting, and I mean, we're in this part right now where we've got, you know, I have a high school senior who is looking at,
yeah,
at post, you know, what am I doing after high school? And I mean, he got an offer to go play baseball, and he got from a couple different places, and it was like, okay, this college, and it's like buying a car. Here's your rebate. Here's your whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you're still like, well, that's still this X price. So same with colleges. It was like, here's our price for college. Here's what we'll give you for baseball. Here's what we're going to give you for academics. And you're like, well, that's still, I mean, when I graduate, what am I going to do? And what's my payment for my student loans going to be?
Yeah.
You know, whereas it's like, okay, the school where I want to go to before even any scholarships is where this school A was going to give me with all these scholarships. I'm not even to that starting point yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I think some of these high school seniors have to look at what, you know, when I get out of college, am I going to have a house payment or a house, you know, like student loans, the equivalent of a house payment or a house out there. And I'm, my major is English, and I'm going to do what with it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's very much, I think some of these kids would get out of college and they're like, well, crap, what am I going to do? Where am I going to go? And for a while, the job market was so tight that they went back for their master's or their doctor's whatever. And then it's like, okay, you got a master's or a doctor's in this, and you're still having to work wherever. Because you can't get into your field, which is unfortunate.
And you just took on more loan debt to get that. And I mean, honestly, like postgraduate stuff, unless you are going to be a lawyer or a doctor or, I mean, I understand like teachers kind of need that. But like when I went to college and graduated, you could have got a teaching degree for $20,000.
Yeah.
That's like a year of college now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I couldn't do that because I went way too long to college. So it was it was a bit more than that.
You had what was the COVID year before the COVID.
Kind of. Yeah. Yeah. No, I had a couple of COVID years in college, honestly, if we're being completely honest. But the worst advice I ever took from anybody, and like, Becky, if you listen to this, I don't blame you. But she suggested my freshman year of college, just take 12 credits the first semester. Like, get used to college. Well, 12 credits was nothing. I could have easily done 15 or 16. Would have been no big deal. So then I got in the habit of like, well, I'll start with 12 and then withdraw down to 9, you know. Then yeah. I've got 3 whole classes the second semester. And then the fall of 96 happened when I transferred to SDSU, and that was not one of my wiser decisions, not because State's a bad school. It was just I had too much fun.
Yeah.
You know, and by the time I finally left Brookings, I was living a block from the back door of Skinner's in a house that is now like the courthouse in Brookings. Like the house I lived in Brookings, the last house I lived in got bulldozed for the new law enforcement or courthouse or whatever. I went to go drive by and I'm like, where is it? Oh, it's gone. Like it's totally gone.
You know, it's interesting with the whole college discussion because it is, you know, there's in hiring people as well, you see people that are super book smart, but have very little common sense. Like, I don't know what you want to call it, but they just, you
I think back in the day, they called it street smarts.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I would say street smart. So you've got some kids that are just super, super smart, book, classroom, whatever. But you get them out in the street smart side of it is they can't carry on a conversation with you.
Mm-hmm.
They can't talk about whatever it is. And it's interesting because I have a friend that works in the computer science industry. And he says there's a school in South Dakota here that does a great job at prepping kids to talk front room and back room conversations. So they can do a lot of code backroom stuff and carry on, but they can also go with you on a client visit on the front side of things, and they can talk with a client, and
they also teach them how to do customer service.
Exactly. Yes. They're very much, because you know, it in the computer science world, you're just like, I just want to do code. Leave me alone. I want to work on this back end stuff. I don't want to talk to the client on the front end. But the way the industry works is you really want somebody who can talk.
Do both.
Yes. You can be a client facing person that can also go in the back room and have chops to get it done. And it's interesting because I don't know that other like professions do stuff like that, where it's like, okay, I graduate from, pick your school, pick your degree. Can you have a conversation with somebody about that degree, get the work done on the back end, but also explain what's going on the front end of it?
Yeah. I guess customer service wasn't hard for me when I got like into college and was, you know, I never had to get trained to deal with customers, because I guess I learned that working at Ampride in Beersford in high school, and I learned it working at the Trucktown Cafe, and I, you know, at Max Cafe, and working a paper route as a 12-year-old. Like, that's where I learned how to deal with customers and people, you know, and kind of what you were talking about with, like, some kids, like, they're super book smart, but then they get to a job and they just can't function in some aspect like that. Like, I mean, there's kids who are never, they didn't need to go get a part-time job in high school. My daughter, as soon as she was old enough to get a part-time job, she started applying, and she's been working part-time. She's only 14. The rules are pretty strict for her still, and they will be for another year and a half. But like, she got into, like, got after right away. She wanted her own money, and like, it was fantastic. Like, I was so proud of her for wanting to do that. And that's going to go a lot farther. Now, kids who grew up a little more, with a little more means, you know, don't necessarily have to go get that job. I don't care how much damn money I had to give my kids. If she hadn't gone and found a job by the time she was 15, I was going to kick her ass out and like, go find a job. You need to go work for someone that's not me.
Yeah.
And make some money for yourself that you earned on your own.
Well, the scariest part is talking to somebody that you don't know and starting a conversation with them. I mean, it's the whole networking process.
Yeah. And I'm still, honestly though, I'm like an extroverted introvert. Like, when I took the personality profile, that's what I am. I'm an extroverted introvert. If someone else starts conversation, I'm cool. Yeah. But another thing though, is when I'm in a situation where I have to be, you know, like when I worked at Kmart and Brookings, you know, it's my job to walk up and ask people, hey, do you need help finding anything?
Sure. Yeah.
That didn't bother me.
Sure.
You know, but like, if I were to ever, you know, have advertising on my podcast, I'm the worst person to do that. Like, I will need to, like, if somebody wants to take half of whatever you make, or maybe not half, but I don't want to make that big of an offer. If this gets
edit
bigger,
that out.
Yeah, we'll have to clip that. But like to walk up and like, I'm a terrible salesman. Like, you know, on some level, even like just with shooting classes, like, it's the part I hate the most is when I have to tell them how much it's going to cost.
Sure.
You know, because I'm just all about the service aspect of it. I've never had anybody say I was overpriced.
Sure.
You know, if anything, they've said I was underpriced sometimes. But I have learned, like, okay, if you don't ask for the purchase, you won't get it. You know? And it usually, like, when somebody who is online shopping impaired, you know, most of my classes are sold online. Like, you buy your spot on my website, SiouxFallsShooting.com, bringing you the podcast.
Yeah, there you go.
They'll call me and say, can you take a card by phone? Because they just don't want to dick with it.
Sure.
But they'll just be asking questions about the class or whatever. And then I'll say, well, I can take a card by over the phone right now if you want to get that spot, you know?
Yeah.
And boy, that was a big step for me to just like, just do it.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to just like hoping they'll go on the website later and buy it.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, what's interesting, you talk about advertising and I've dealt with my fair share of sales people.
Oh, yeah, a lot, probably.
And
just like I have. And yeah. How many times have you wanted to strangle them for doing something really stupid?
Well, so what's interesting is they...
Can you recut this line? Because I didn't have the client read the script before you recorded it. Now you have to do it all over again because I just didn't show it to them.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting because they do run it's a tough role because you've got the client beating them up on one end and they come back to the office and you beat them up on that end because you're
but
well,
they're getting paid. Well, yeah. They're the ones who are rolling up in the fucking Mercedes. They can deal with some shit.
I agree with you there. Where are we going with this? I don't even remember.
Salespeople. I can't sell.
Well, so what's interesting is you've got certain salespeople that will, when you talk about ask for money, you've got some that are very comfortable asking within a certain range. But once they get out of that range, so say it's it's $25,000 to $50,000 is the range they're comfortable in. You tell them, I need something at $150,000, $250,000, and all of a sudden it's like, whoa, I don't know if I can do that. And it's pretty interesting because then you've got some that are absolutely fearless and like, shoot, $250,000, let's ask for $250,000. Or let's ask for $500,000. Okay, all right, whatever. You think you can get it, go get it.
Yeah.
But there's certain ones that I've noticed this as far as some have this range that if you're like, well, the value of this is really above this price that you're wanting to sell it for.
But they're used to getting yeses and they want to keep getting yeses.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's a little bit of a pucker factor that goes on where it's like, oh, this is a yeah. little, you know, but the thing is if you believe in the product and the person who you're selling it to believes in the product and they believe the value is there, it's pretty, I mean, it should be a not an easy yes, but it should be a, hey, here's where it is. You need to understand the value is X. Here's where we're asking for. It's a fair price. Let's move on. But yeah, I mean, there's some salespeople that are killing it and there's some salespeople that are not killing it. And it's tough.
I'm a salesman who would not be killing it. I sold cars for a month and I sold two. I'm not good at it. I'm not good at selling. Cause I'm just too, it was John Elway Ford on Colfax in Denver. Okay. This is not a ritzy neighborhood. There was some old money. There would occasionally be, you know, the old lady with her pearls rolling up.
Sure, yeah.
But it was mostly not a well-to-do neighborhood.
Well, Colfax Avenue and there's other stuff that goes on.
Oh yeah. Well, Colfax goes all the way through the whole city. So, I mean, there's a spectrum of Colfax, but and this was in an area that was relatively close to like the, gosh, it's been so long. But anyway, people would come in and they've got like a 450 credit score and they've got a car that runs, but something they heard in an ad or something got them to come in and I'm just like, you should make better decisions than this. This is not a good decision because you're going to take a bath on your trade-in and you're going to be in more debt than you were when you walked in. And you should just save this difference in money every month and put it towards repairs to the car you already have. Like that's how I have a conscience.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. I hear you. I mean,
I would more want to counsel them. Like you should not buy this car.
Yeah.
You really shouldn't.
Yeah.
And that was one of the two cars I sold somebody. You know,
well, and so what's interesting is veterinarians have that same situation where there's people, especially small animal vets.
Oh, God.
In metro areas, you've got people that probably should be, instead of doing open heart surgery on Fido or whatever, you should probably take that money and spend on yourself and help improve your own life.
Yeah.
And it's tough. I get it. I mean, I understand there's pet stuff, but I'm like, there also,
no,
somebody
I
needs to give them a reality check.
I don't understand it. I do not understand it. Now, maybe it's because I grew up in a family where we had a cat named Snuffy. who was an asshole. And eventually, my dad went out to the vet in Beersford and said, kill it. Because Snuffy was an asshole. All he would do was attack us and scratch us and bite us. He had no love in him. It was just like, give him the blue juice. We've had enough of this little bastard. And then our next cat was Gizmo, and Gizmo was the cat we had for the rest of my life. And he was a serial killer, but he didn't attack us. He killed everything else, but he didn't kill us. So, like, the whole I'm going to spend $4,000 on my pet to have a surgery, like, that does not compute in my brain. This is a poor financial decision. And I know you love your puppy Muffin, as Tosh would say. I love the puppy Muffin. It's a member of our family. Yes. But this member of your family is going to be dead in 3 years no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, the life expectancy of this dog is only so many years. Okay? Yeah. And you're already at 12.
Yeah.
You should probably not spend $5,000 on a surgery.
Yeah.
For a thing that's going to be worm food in 3 years.
Yeah.
So, I know that's harsh, but at the same time, there's people who have gone into debt. They keep their puppy Muffin alive.
Well, what's interesting is you're now having pet insurance offered as part of your, you know, annual benefits.
Just
package.
Give me more money. Just give me more money.
Yeah.
I had no idea that was a thing. Yeah. I have not heard of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of companies. I mean, it's becoming more and more popular where pet insurance is an option in addition to your dental and your health and your 401k And I don't know, it's maybe part of my aspect of us, and we have a dog at home. My wife says, you know, when it comes time, if there's something that goes on, please keep us grounded. And and so my thing was growing up on a farm, you know, you had your high value animals, which, you know, were at the time for us were horses. And it was like, if something's wrong with your cat, we can always get another cat.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, let's just be smart about this and let's be rational. And people become attached to their pets. I totally get it.
On some level, I get it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I loved every cat we ever had. Like, well, not everyone. Snuffy was a prick. But, Gizmo was awesome. The cat I had in college, his name was Squeak. He got his name from basketball. You ever see that movie?
Yes.
Because he jumped on my brother when he was a little kitten and had the razor-sharp claws, dug into his knee, and he was like, oh, and he tosses the cat away. I still hadn't named him yet. I'd had him for a week and a half. He's like, oh, you little bitch. That's his name. What, bitch? I said, no, Squeak. Because that movie had just come out at that time, and I'd just seen it not long before that, because the dude Kenny, they called him Bitch or Squeak.
So you talk, okay, so talking about animals on a farm. So we had...
Which, by the way, real quick, that's the reason there are no animals in this house, because my wife grew up on a farm, and animals live outside. They don't live in the house.
That's true. And so we purposely kept our cats a little hungry so that they would, you know, kill some mice and whatever else was around, you know. But
you weren't giving them Friskies every night?
Yeah. I mean, they got their cat food or whatever, but cat food was kind of almost a bait for the raccoons, which would come into, raccoons love cat food. They also like marshmallows for some reason. But anyway, so my, we're kind of getting a little off the path here, but.
No, there's no path. There's no path. This show goes wherever it goes.
So anyway, my dad was in this feed shed that we had that kept the chickens in there, and the cats usually would hang out in there and whatever. And, you know, our cats would kind of just come and go and whatever. You know, he didn't really get attached to too many of them because who knows, there would be something that would come and eat them or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in the feed shed, and he sees this gray thing kind of in the corner. He's like, oh, this must be one of the cats. So he kind of reaches over and pets it, and it moves. And he's like, whoa, cats don't have a long, skinny tail. Here it was an opossum. It was in between a few feed sacks and whatever. And he's like, oh, yeah, I won't be petting that thing.
Oh, jeez. Those things are the most hideous looking things when you see them up close.
Oh, yes.
They're just awful looking.
Oh, And talk about, you know, using some shooting sports to take care of things. You know, we would have a few raccoons and some possums, and every once in a while you get a skunk, you know, that like to hang out. And the one thing, you just kind of, you know, take care of that thing, and it would smell for a while. And but
I have a tidbit of trivia for you here. This is something I teach in every one of my enhanced permit classes, because I have to go as part of the class. Like, I'm required to go through all the firearms laws of South Dakota.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the laws is, I wish I could cite the number, but I don't have the exact script of it in front of me, but the law is that it is illegal to allow a firearm to protrude from a motor vehicle during a hunting season, except when shooting at coyotes, jackrabbits, rodents, basically anything on that varmint predator list. It's all totally legal to shoot at from a vehicle. It doesn't even say you have to stop the car. It just says you can't allow it to protrude, let the firearm protrude from a motor vehicle during a hunting season, except when discharging the firearm at raccoons, rodents, coyotes, temporarily wolves when they were delisted, because they're on the varmint predator list in South Dakota.
Yeah.
But we don't really have them, so it doesn't matter.
Well, I tell you what, skunks were, back in the day, skunks were probably the biggest pest and nuisance. And you would hit them on the road, and your vehicle, you pull them into the garage, and you're like, no, leave that thing, park that thing outside, because
we're going to burn this car.
Oh, man. And then coons were getting huge.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember hitting one, and it was like a...
Those things are tough, too.
Oh, this thing was a corn-fed coon, and it was probably the size of a bowling ball.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised I didn't lose more than just, you know, kind of a front bumper brace on the vehicle that I hit it with.
It's like hitting a boulder when you hit him with a car.
Yeah. And but anyway, it was definitely interesting growing up on the farm, and all the animals.
Speaking of skunks, my cousin, who is my age, she was walking around out in the front yard when she was a toddler, and she found a black and white kitty, and she picked it up by the tail and was walking up and was like, look, black and white kitty. And somehow it did not spray. Somehow it did not. Another skunk story. I was in high school, and we were hunting some field south of my uncle's farm, south of Beersford. I don't know whose place it was, but we're walking along through this field, and Dad saw like some of the, it was like a cut corn field, and there were some weeds and stuff in it, and you know, it started shaking, and so he started. My dad has, I don't know if it's legal or illegal to like shoot a pheasant on the ground, but my dad was a purist. He's like, I'm not shooting a pheasant that's not in the air.
Sure, yeah.
So he would like kick it before he would shoot it if it was on the ground, like to get it to fly.
Sure, yeah.
So he's chasing what he thinks is a pheasant, and then all of a sudden he sees black and white kitty, and he stops, and he's like, "Shh!" And just boom, boom, both barrels in the shotgun. And he's like, we're out of here. What? I just blasted a skunk, and we are currently upwind of it. We are not continuing downwind. Let's go. And we walk back to the truck. We drive around the section, and we got downwind of it. Oh, God, was it bad. And then another time pheasant hunting, I was up by Redfield hunting with my dad and a friend of his. I just walked through a slough. I was just pushing. And I wasn't the only one that went through this slough. Like, a few people went through this slough, and apparently I walked through where a skunk had sprayed.
Ugh.
And so it's all over my vest, my pants, my boots, everything. So I end up stripping down in the parking lot of whatever this little shitty motel was in Redfield. And I'm standing there in my underwear, like, throwing it all in the back of my truck before I go inside and shower. And it was... I washed that clothing like three times before it got out. It was nasty. Yeah. So bad.
Skunks are not something.
No.
I
grew up on a farm briefly, like until I was four when we moved into town in Beersford. We lived on a farm that my parents didn't farm, but we rented the house.
Sure.
That was on a farm, and there were pigs on the farm. And I used to love going out into the pig barn, and like I would chase them out of the barn into the pen, and then I would chase them back into the barn.
Good.
And I would run back out, and like they weren't huge pigs. It wasn't like they were these big, huge hogs. But they weren't like piglets either. They were somewhere in between. I don't know the
sure.
I don't know the lingo. But then I was going up the little ramp that was all covered with pig shit, you know, and it was slippery.
Oh, yeah.
And I ate shit on that pig ramp, and then I got trampled by all the pigs. And that was the last time I ran in and out of that pig barn on that farm. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's
farm life.
It's character building.
I didn't realize you grew up on a farm.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we didn't.
You're from Minnesota, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Where'd you grow up?
So north of Lake Wilson, it's a town about, well, back in the day, it had probably had about 320 some people. And then we had a tornado come through and basically take out the communities of Chandler and Lake Wilson, which were the high school and elementary, and then it. Forced us to go to Murray County, to form Murray County Central, which is in Slayton then.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, we grew up on a hobby farm. It was not really, I mean, we didn't do grain or anything like that. We just had some animals that were kind of, you know, we had horses, we had chickens, we had some sheep, we had, just trying to, you know, a variety of different, it was kind of like a little bit of a zoo every once in a while.
Yeah.
You know? You had a few different things, and then some wild rodents that would show up every once in a while. And
oh, so just east of Pipestone, or yeah, a little ways east of Pipestone.
Yeah, yep.
Okay.
So kind of, I don't know. It was 7 acres, you know, you had a lot of in that area. It's all agricultural, so it's farming, yeah. Had neighbors who would milk cows. Talk about dedication. I mean, milking cows. Oh. It's there's no vacation there.
Nope. And as soon as my dad and uncle were off the farm, Grandpa got rid of the cows.
Yeah.
The milking days were over because he didn't have any free labor to do it. So,
yeah.
That was the end of that era.
Well, and you see some of these farms now are so like dairy farms are so automated.
Yeah.
You know, mechanical. I mean, the science behind them is unreal. I mean, they know when a cow is hungry, when it's, you know, it's amazing to see how technically advanced these places have become. I saw one thing the other day where they were talking to a hog building, and they were walking you through this, and this thing was like, each hog had a chip in it, and it would activate, like they could get into certain places to eat. And then if the females were pregnant, they would get automatically into this other location.
Oh, wow.
And it was just, I'm like, this is like way beyond what it used to. I mean,
oh, I know. Just, I mean, my in-laws, Crystal's folks, like they live on a farm, and her brothers are pretty much running it all now. And, but like the technology that goes into, they do have a hog operation, and then they do crops too. They do a lot of sugar beets up there.
Oh, sure.
In that area. And I'll never forget, like, I didn't realize how far farming had gone technologically until I was told that. And this is shortly after Crystal and I got together, that when they're driving the combine, they're not so much driving the combine as much as they're monitoring the automation as the GPS drives the combine through the field and picks up all the shit that the tractor dropped off back in the spring.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? Like, well, we got to turn it around. It doesn't do that. You know, when we get to the end, we got to turn it. We got to do that. But like, it does all the subtle adjustments the whole way down the field.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa, that is crazy. And then like the other things, like the drones, you know, using that to check stuff out. Like my father-in-law was asking me what I knew about drones. I was like, I don't know anything about drones. I'm sorry, Jim. I have no idea. I got nothing for you. I know there's some level of an FAA certificate you got to get for anything that's going to do much of anything cool. So
yeah,
and I was like, you should probably ask your son. He's the one working on his commercial pilot's license right now. He's probably got more of a grip on that than I will. But
well, and you talk about GPS and farming. It's precision agriculture is really, I mean, because diesel prices are so expensive.
Oh, yeah.
Fertilizer and pesticide and seed. And you can't afford to overlap anymore. I mean, it used to be like when you'd plant, you'd drop the outside planter wheel, you know, so you knew you had to straddle that the next time when you'd come back through. Now it's all GPS because it's like if you overlap, you're wasting, you know, fuel dollars, you're wasting fertilizer dollars, you're wasting pesticide dollars. I mean, it's like you need to be as precise as you can. And like you said, you're just turning the thing around at the end, and you're probably pushing a button to lift the equipment up,
yeah,
as you make the turn, and then you're dropping it back down, set your GPS back on, and away you go. It's yeah. There's no guesstimating anymore as far
nope.
as where you're at. It's unbelievable.
The same technology that got rid of DJs. Have you heard they're going to get rid of DJs with AI?
Well, so you know what's interesting is there was an advertiser here that just got a hard time about using AI models in a print ad because they're like they wanted to show diversity and like different skin tones and whatever for their product. It was. I'm trying to think of
like a local business or
no, it was like a national, I'd hate to say the wrong clothing manufacturer. But anyway, they got into trouble about this, or they got in a hot water because people are like, well, just hire, you know, real models instead of requiring an AI model. But there's a whole thing about writing.
What the hell is an AI model?
Well, so basically it's
robot?
Well, no, it's like in the the graphic design world, we have things that are called like 3D models.
Oh,
so it's
gotcha.
It's basically a
you're just drawing the clothing you make on.
Yeah, so
on I a mean, cartoon person,
you could definitely just go in and you could say, I want this color skin tone, I want this color eyes, I want this color hair, I want the hair long, short, curled, whatever, and I want this person to be X feet tall. I want them to look this and this and whatever. And all of a sudden now you have an individual that you know, and we use it on a graphic design basis because we may not have, to have somebody get rigged up and to model, like have them be modeled exactly. It's more cost prohibitive.
Yeah.
Whereas you can just buy a model that's already made and you can adapt it for whatever you need.
Yeah.
Whereas in this instance, it was they were just modeling, you put your shirt, your pants, whatever on them, and that's what they were selling in their ad. But you talk about AI for like writing commercials or voiceover stuff like that. It's already happening, and there's a little bit of a I don't know what you want to call it, but almost like a does this feel right doing this kind of a. You know, you're keeping people out of jobs.
On some level, I get it, but on another level, when it's like writing content, that's just plagiarism because it's just like grabbing shit off the internet and combining it into something that was. Oh, that's what we wrote at Town Square. That's right. That's what those dumbass articles we were writing. We just grabbed other people's shit and rewrote it. But no, it's on some level, it's sort of weird and unethical, but at the same time. I heard a demo of what like an AI radio jock would sound like, and it was ridiculous. It was so stupid. There's one thing AI can't do that a radio jock can do, and that's personality.
Yeah, well, and it's getting better though. It's actually pretty scary because you have like for visually impaired individuals, you have systems and companies that are working with like Google when it tracks your voice or whatever, you know, like if you've got a remote that you talk in and you can say, hey, I want my TV to change to this or that. All those little like vocal tonal qualities and dialects, it's picking those up and it's just.
Yeah, but that's not necessarily personality. That's just inflection. That's
true.
That's like live human voice. I'm talking about, but then all of a sudden I pull my dick out. Okay.
Yeah.
Like,
please don't.
I'm not going to, but just as sort of an extreme example of what AI is not going to think of.
Sure. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Probably because whatever company is designing it or selling it to a company, they don't want it to just like up and pull their dick out. So, yeah. That's the sort of thing. Like the day that there's an AI comedian performing on stage, like if I'm alive when that happens, like I'm just praying for the meteor, you know, like, cause there's just certain things like when it comes to tasks, okay, that's what technology can replace from humans.
Sure. Sure.
You know, a lot of the auto industry went robotic, you know, it's not necessarily AI, but it's robots. It's computers and machines doing what people used to do.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's some things I don't think machines will ever be able to do what the human being can do. And yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, my wife was showing me some AI thing that'll like write articles and it's like, yeah, I've read some of those articles in the past and they're shitty.
Yeah.
You know,
you can definitely see through it.
You can tell.
Yeah.
This is just a conglomeration of bullshit on the internet.
Yeah.
You know, it's just sentences and phrases all put together. There was something funny on like, I think it was the Meat Eater podcast I was listening to, and they were talking about how AI was like trying to like, when it came to like hunting stuff, you know, something that isn't, I mean, it's widely written about on the internet, but not as widely written about as like cooking is.
Sure.
You know, so like things it was coming up with were just like really, it was like, cause they do Meat Eater trivia on Wednesdays, and it was like the, like trying to get AI to write the questions for the guy.
Sure.
Who's actually from South Dakota who does those. It was so, like the answers were so bad. It was like, where's a good place to find elk? Elk are found throughout the western states of the United States from Colorado, Montana, and like, so it's just telling you go to Colorado, Montana, and Wyoming, not like, you know, go to unit 47 in Wyoming or what, I don't know what that is, but
sure, yeah.
You know, it was very nonspecific.
Well, and so what's a little strange about that is what's now believable? Like, I mean, if you're trying to research something and you've got a bunch of AI generated stuff.
Oh God. It's just that much worse reliability on what you're researching.
Well, yeah. And is it going to dilute the truth? Is it going to alter the truth? Because that's the whole conversation right now going on with like TikTok and what's happening there. They're influencing the content that's coming to you and things being served to you on a digital platform. And it's like, what do you really believe now as far as what you see? Is it truly, can you believe this? And if you're trying to research something, if you're doing a research project, you're like, okay, is this a credible source?
Yeah.
Is this not a credible source? Is this, you know, you talk about people in our industry, in the media industry, having like doing a false report on something because they thought it was really truly something and somebody just feeding them a line of BS.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I went down that rabbit hole a couple of times, you know, starting a blog post on something and then I found out, oh, this is really old or this is not real.
Yeah.
That happened to me a couple of times where I'm just like, oh.
Yeah. And so you think, okay, we have a hard time deciphering that.
Yeah.
Think of
AI is not that good yet.
Well, and you think of like the, you know, our parents' generation and even older than that, who are trying to figure out, I mean, you sit into a computer class with somebody who's like 75 or so, and you're like trying to explain, well, don't click on this. If it says win this, don't click on that because that's going to load a lot of crap on your computer that you don't want. So, you know, don't trust any of that stuff. But answer my email that I'm sending to you. You know, it's tough to, where's your filter? You know, your personal filter as far as, do I believe this? Do I not believe this? What do I do with this? You know, I don't know.
And that's why sometimes I wish there would just be like an asteroid that doesn't like take everybody out, but you know, just brings us back about 100 years or so technologically. I don't think that would be the worst thing ever, you know, like Does the world really need TikTok? I don't think it is. No offense, Diane. I know you got your 20,000 followers, but but no. Does the world really need TikTok? I don't think it does.
I mean,
we don't even need Facebook anymore. I still need Instagram, though. I like Instagram. It's like the one social media I really enjoy.
You know, talk about TikTok. So I appreciate you having me over for this podcast because it got me out of painting my house.
You're welcome.
And as I was sitting on my extension ladder on steps, which I had blocks of wood on the lower steps to even it out so I was level, you know, and I had my kid holding the bottom of the ladder, and going through my head was that song on TikTok, Dumb Ways to Die, you know? And I'm sitting there going, oh my gosh, this is totally
You could just have my brother come over. He'll just like climb up like a monkey on a wall and do whatever.
Oh gosh.
No, like the what is that song, A Thousand Dumb Ways to Die or something like that?
And you see all these crazy, like, it is actually kind of hilarious, and you can get sucked in watching stuff on TikTok because it starts feeding you stuff that you're interested in. The algorithm is just ridiculous.
Remember when TikTok was called Vine? You know, you got your 6-second videos, and then like all these little social media things that have been around, like they were either copied or just absorbed by somebody else. And then Vine's the only one I can think of that really just like up and died. Wasn't there, what was the video part of Twitter before it just became part of Twitter? What was that called?
Oh.
Was it Periscope? Is that what it was?
Well, so Periscope was the, like, you could go live and
Yeah. Okay, yeah. And then Twitter just absorbed that, didn't they?
Yeah, I believe so, because you could, I mean, yeah, and then about that same time, Facebook started going with Facebook Live,
yeah.
And all these other things where, because Periscope was really the thing that you could go live from, and people could log in and check it out.
Yeah, it was really the first one of those,
yeah.
Where it was just this instant live stream. Like, I'm not a big go live guy, like,
yeah,
I am when it's audio only, but when it's video, I'm scared. I'm an audio, like, video killed the radio star bullshit. Podcasts are killing it. And I have no interest in doing a video podcast. Like, zero. I mean, because, like, the level of cleanliness I have to, like, have a friend over and not film it is a lot lower than, like, putting some visual thing on the internet. But I mean, you can also fake that too, because you can just like shoot the video in a way where it's like, oh, this backdrop's great. I have a bunch of shit everywhere else in the room.
Well, see, that if this was video, we'd have to do like makeup and lighting and the whole works, you know.
Oh, that sounds awful.
So speaking of this, so I've got a few friends that work for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and one of my friends was talking about when Tom Brady was the quarterback for them, and he deals with a lot of different, like, you know, on different levels you deal with different star personalities and whatever.
Yeah.
And he's never been one that's really starstruck about anything, but he said that when Tom Brady came in,
that's a whole nother level.
He was kind of like, all right, I got the starstruck,
yeah,
whatever. But so Tom has this whole group of people that just make sure he doesn't look old. And so
he does look amazing. He's the same age as me.
Oh,
like he's like 4 or 5 months younger than me. And he looks amazing.
Can I hire those people for me too?
Oh my gosh.
But anyway, so they're shooting this thing, and all of a sudden it stop. We got to stop the cameras. And they go in and they touch up his makeup or whatever, you know, because he's starting to look old, I guess, that's what they thought. And so then they started recording again and whatever. But
guess what? He is old. He was playing NFL football at 45. He was fucking old.
Well, right. So you talk about what did I do with my life? You know, what did I do? He's 45, done whatever. I mean, although I'm not sure I want to be in the same situation he's in currently right now.
No, he's losing a lot of money. Well,
he's losing a lot of money on both ends.
Yeah.
The whole Giselle thing.
Yeah.
And then also the whole crypto. He's kind of, I mean,
I think he'll be okay.
He probably will be okay.
Yeah, I think he'll survive.
But it's like, okay, so what, you know, if you changed your career path or your life path, what would you, you know?
Oh, look at you going deep here. honestly, I wouldn't change a thing. I mean, there's the woulda, coulda, shouldas and how this could have been better. The only thing I would change in my life career path is I would have started investing in Apple as soon as I graduated high school.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I mean, the only thing I would do differently is like financial stuff.
Yeah.
Every other life choice led to something, you know, like, because the thing I always come back to is, had I made different choices in like career life things, would I have met Crystal on March 29th of 2006?
Sure. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then I wouldn't have the three kids I have. And I don't usually go down that road, except with financial decisions, because before I met Crystal, I made a lot of dumb ones. So, and those don't necessarily change, you know, your path in life outside of your comfort level and level of debt. It could maybe change things in bigger ways, but I don't really have any.
See, and I have to agree with you, because I think there's different things that happen in your life that shape, like, you know, even if there was something bad that happened, there's something that comes out of it that you're like, okay, I'm a better person because of
100%
X.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always interesting to go, that guy, like you said, to Tom Brady, I'm that guy's age, you know, or when people were playing, you know, baseball professionally, or, you know, you've got a, you know, governor of a state, or you've got a, somebody who's doing something on a big national level, and you're like, shoot, they're the same age as
me. You know what wigged me out, though? It was the first time I went to a doctor and they were younger than me. I don't like that.
Yeah.
I mean, our family doctor, I don't know exactly how old she is. She's in the ballpark of my age. Like, she's maybe a year older or a year or two younger. I mean, I have a feeling we were in high school at the same time.
Yeah.
So, like, her age doesn't freak me out. She's, you know, a peer on that level. But, like, I had to go to a orthopedic doctor a couple years ago when I had a bad toe. And one of the guys in that office was like my brother-in-law's brother. The other guy was significantly younger than him. And I was like, this is weird. this is weird. But no, the first time where I was like, shit. And you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. You hit an age where you're just, shit. For me, it was when Kerry Wood retired.
Yeah.
Pitcher for the Cubs.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Because I remember being in college. I used to be a huge Cubs fan until I couldn't take the abuse anymore. And yeah, they won a World Series after I quit following them. And you know what happened when they were winning the World Series? Like, the moment they won the World Series, I was taking a piss outside my cabin in the Black Hills deer hunting. Because we had it on the TV inside. But anyway, Kerry Wood retires. And it was sort of this sudden thing. He got his kid out of school so he could come and be there at his last game that he was going to pitch in. And Kerry Wood was my age. He was born in 1977. Like, I think, like, he's just a couple months younger than me, kind of like Tom Brady. Same age as me. I remember coming home from class in Brookings in 1998. And it was, like, in May, like, towards the end of the school year. And I walk in and Chip Carey's doing the game. It was the first year after Harry Carey died. So the new, you know, his grandson was doing the games.
Sure, yeah.
And I turn on the TV to the Cubs game on WGN. And here's, and the 3-2. Got him! Number 16. I'm like, or 16 for Kerry Wood. I was like, 16? Who? And, like, I was a huge fan. Like, I watched every game I could back then, and it was only his second start with the Cubs. He was 20 years old. 20 years old. Second start with the Cubs. And he ends up striking out 20 Houston Astros with a curveball that was from another planet. Like, it was just sick. And then when he retired, because that was, like, the first guy who was, like, my age who was, like, a big deal in the major leagues.
Yeah.
And then when he retired, it was like, shit, I'm that age now, where if I had made it to Major League Baseball, I would probably be retiring. And that seemed like an old fucker when I was in high school. You know, just like, shit. But yeah, we, you know, it turns out none of us gets out of this alive.
Yeah.
You know, so, but, yeah. Well, this was fun, man. I don't think I've ever hung out with you for this long, ever.
Well,
yeah. I've known you a hell of a long time, but like, and we've had a few like longish conversations at the radio station back in the day, but like,
yeah,
never just hung out and drank some whiskey and shot the shit. So,
oh, yeah. Well, maybe this was too long. We'll have to keep it shorter the next
time. There's no such thing on this podcast. Now I have this beautiful Tascam Mixcast 4.
It is sweet.
With, I knew you were going to geek out over this when I sent you that picture. I was like, he's going to be like, oh, wow, that's actually kind of...
We could put the and kick this drum is, on this blue one here, and we could put the cymbals on the other one.
We'll play the drum beat.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Sweet.
Yeah. It only lasts for like 5 seconds, but it's... And then we've got the air horn. We've got the heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
And I can stop it.
Ooh, sweet.
So that's cool. And so, everybody, thank you for everybody. Eric Vasgard, thank you for being here tonight.
I didn't know there were that many people here in your basement.
No, there's not. there's no one here. The kids were shockingly quiet. Usually you'll hear a thud or two.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is the living room above us. Usually there's like a thunk, thunk, thunk. But Rockley got his basketball out of the way outside, as you saw when you rolled up. Like, I was in my office gunroom thing next door here, and all of a sudden I heard those silky smooth pipes of Eric's go, hey. And I'm like, oh, all the doors are open. What's up, dude? Come on in. Usually it's the Ring doorbell going, doo, doo, doo.
I was about to get in an intense basketball game out here, of course, you know, but I figured I better keep my appointment. So
the whole Rock always wants me to play like 1-on-1 or 1v2 against him and a friend, and there have been too many times where I still think I can cross over, and my back is like, no, you can't do that anymore. So. No, this is a hell of a good time. Great stories. Thanks for coming on, Eric. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you very much.